I'm suspecting that we're going to have two different meetings. Let's start the meeting. Good morning to everybody and our visitors. And according to our agenda, the agenda is in front of us, consideration of committee minutes, matters arising from the minutes, briefings with from Olive Life, and then 3.2 Sports Trust, the announcement, the invitation, the correspondence. Is it okay with you, Ngale agenda, anyone to adopt the agenda? Honorable Bachman, are you adopting the agenda? Okay. Any second, Honorable Abrams and Honorable Mokjad. Oh, you want to say it.
Good morning, Chairperson. Yes, I second the agenda. Thank you.
Thank you. The agenda seconded and tended by Honorable Moteza. Consideration of the minutes. Let's take our minutes. Page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4. Honorable Mutel.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
Paragraph 3 on page 4. That sentence was very, very shortened. It should be extended by saying how much of 15% allocation was spent for what from 2013-2014 financial year to date. That was my expression. Not only he requested the breakdown by SAWEPA with regard to facilities in provinces.
Point taken. Let's go back to page 1, 2, matters arising, 1, 2, adoption of our minutes. I'm presenting these minutes that are the true reflection of what we've discussed, because already the minutes were adopted without firstly check on the matters arising. The minutes are adopted and with the addition on the point by Honorable Matega. Thank you very much, honorable members. Are you taking care of that paragraph? Okay. And then let me take this opportunity to welcome and tell you who is with us today. Okay. Ms. Grace, you can present your delegation in this committee. Fortunately, the names are not in front of me, but with due respect, being somebody who's leading the delegation, please talk to us. Thank you so much. But first and foremost, we welcome you, and we're hoping that as a new committee, for the first time that we invited you, you will tell all and will ask all. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Grace Makhape, and I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Love Life. With me is Linda Kumbemba. Linda Kumbemba is our Chief Finance Officer, and Rex Max Machego is our Senior Executive for Program Operations.
Thank you. Now is the time that you must take us through, whoever is going to take us through. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning, members. So, what I have to share with the committee, and I see that there's only one familiar face in the room. Many people are new, we've not shared the work of Love Life with you in the past. We tried to shorten it because what we have to say can be very, very long. So what I wanted to talk to you about today, firstly, is just a summary of the strategy review that we have done. And then, because the partnership we have with the Sports and Recreation is on Love Life Games, we're going to share a little bit on the performance of Love Life Games, the challenges that we've experienced in the last year. And then we will put some highlights here and there along the way. And then we can talk about the finances and the audited financial statements have been circulated as well as the annual report. We thought it was important that we first focus on what we agreed with the Department of Sports as the goal, the overall objective that puts us together in terms of our partnership. One of the department's delivery partners, Love Life, provides more explicit linkages with NF school sports events by offering HIV and AIDS awareness campaigns, life skills training, learning materials, and other resources to equip coaches with the soft skills required for working with young athletes. So this is what the department stated at the beginning of the period. So we were established in 1999. And Love Life focus in 1999 really was in mass media-based awareness on HIV. And around 2000, Love Life Games was established really as a vehicle that encouraged young people's participation in sports so that they would adopt healthy lifestyles. That is the key objective of Love Life Games as part of the Love Life strategy. But as time went on, we realized that sports is way more than about healthy living. It became very critical in the formation of identity, in self-esteem. As we understood HIV, we realized that sports has to be much more mass-based than what we had been doing. So not only talented athletes are the focus of Love Life Games for us. All people, all young people have to participate in sports for Love Life. So what that graph shows really is the growth of Love Life since 2000 up to 2013, which is our last fully audited financial year. And you can see that Love Life Games is such a critical objective for us to reach young people and keep young people engaged. Because the green bar on that slide, on the graph, shows the young people we reach as a result of Love Life Games. In 2013, we reached about 1.5 million young people who participated in Love Life Games. And this is, does not include spectators. These are young people who participated in Love Life Games. This reflects, I know this is not a very clear map, but it reflects Love Life's presence across the country. We work in 900 communities, in just under 9,000 schools, or just over 9,000 schools, you would have picked up from the annual report. What we try to do with this map is to also identify which of our communities are urban communities and which ones are rural communities. Now, you know, we're not everywhere. There are many more communities in South Africa than the 900 communities that we work in. But we have a good mix of between urban and rural. At this analysis, which was done for us by the Medical Research Council, we're sitting at about 40% rural communities and about 55% urban communities, and 5%, which is the green dot there, is mixed communities that are both rural and urban. So in 2013, we undertook a strategy review process. And there, it was largely in response to the Human Sciences Research Council's report that showed that even though there's a reduction in new infections among young people, we continued to see a growing problem of HIV infection in general in South Africa. And an area of concern for us was that that study showed that the knowledge levels about HIV seemed to be on the decline. So we thought that what was important, because we can see that there has been, and in the same study confirmed that among young people we have seen continuing reductions in HIV infections. But it's a major concern for us that if when they are young they keep themselves HIV free, but as they grow older and the risk of infection increases, the risk seemed to be, we needed to do something to intensify our efforts. So we identified a few areas of priority. The first one was, it was very, very clear that where the infection is on the increase seemed to be around urban communities in the informal settlements on the margin of urban communities. So we thought that we needed to do something to strengthen our targeting for maximum impact. And that is really because the HIV epidemic has changed a little bit. So we need to go directly to those communities where the likelihood of HIV infection is higher. And so these pockets of new infections, as I say, are urban informal communities and rural informal communities, but particularly urban informal communities. And this, that heat map really reflects that. The heat areas are the areas that we need to concentrate on because they have higher levels of urban informal communities. The second thing that we felt was important for us to strengthen is to guarantee quality. So at the level of scale that Love Life works, we work in 900 communities, 10,000 schools, you know, so we are all over South Africa. And we see that the bigger we get, the more likely quality can be inconsistent. So it became important that we just make Love Life a little less big and strengthen the quality in those areas where we were working. And so what we did is to simplify our program delivery. The second thing is that as we understood HIV, we saw that young people who seem to put themselves, who are more likely to be HIV positive, are young people who are economically marginalized. And so we felt it was necessary that we integrate in a much stronger way, strengthening pipelines of opportunity for young people. The earlier evaluation that we had done of one of our programs, it's called the Groundbreaker Program, and I'll talk about it a little bit later. It showed us that young people who participated in the Groundbreaker Program are more likely to get a job, start a business that succeeds, and even likely to go after the program on to higher education and therefore improve their prospects for life opportunity. So we established an academy that was a department that was training groundbreakers, and got that
I must report that this thing was doing noise. They are testing. We are safe. They have recorded that. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. So we established the Love Life Academy, which used to be a department that was doing the training of groundbreakers within Love Life. It's a registered academy, it's an accredited training provider, and young people who are 18 years and above can go through the academy. So what we're trying to do is that same benefit we saw with groundbreakers within Love Life, we're extending it to other 18 to 25 year olds in our society. And so we're looking, the academy just got established last year, and we're looking forward to really a much more expanded benefit with, for young people, linking them with opportunity. The third thing that is a priority, and in fact we also reported on this, but as I say, this is a new committee now, at the last committee meeting that we had, as we understood the way young people communicate, and it became important for us that we invest a lot more in cell phone-based communication. And as I said, we were quite concerned about the fact that basic HIV knowledge seems to be on the decline, and that risk behaviors are also on the rise among young people. So our cell phone-based platform is a platform that is critical for having the voice of young people heard. So it's a mobile site. It's a place where they can go in and get facts about sex and sexuality and any other thing about depression, about suicide. It's a platform that brings all of the Love Life programs onto a cell phone for them. And it's also a platform where, you know, you can always have a finger on the pulse of what young people are thinking. So one of the things that we have on the platform is a regular poll. Once a week you send out your poll and you say the Minister of Health has introduced a subdermal implant for contraceptives. Do you agree? Would you use it? So you always get young people's reaction and response to issues as they come in, and they're involved in current affairs also in that way. So it's a very, very important platform that we're looking forward to and seeing how it can be of benefit also in a broader way, not just for Love Life. The fourth thing we are going to do is to leverage Love Life's clinical footprint. Young people continue to say that access to clinical services sometimes is the problem. Sometimes it's about opening hours with regards to school and opening hours of clinics and so on. And so we're also hoping that through the digital platform, they would also be able to find quickly the clinic next to them in the event that they needed to access healthcare. So this one just presents the summary of all Love Life programs. In the past, I've talked about many, many programs within Love Life. But in this slide, we've pulled and sort of just concentrated each program a little bit. The first one is Love Lifestyle. It's our life skills program. This is where we reach 10,000 schools and we work with young people. It's not quite 10,000, about 9,900 or so, but it's in the annual report. This is where we reach teenagers in schools and extramural activities through our Y centers. And youth leadership is the groundbreaker and principal program, and it also includes the academy as I've just described it. This is about young people and their ambitions and opportunities, linking them to opportunity. I Love Life is the incentive programming for teenage healthy behavior, which is the mobile phone-based programming that I was describing just now. Love Life Games is our sports and recreation, and is now including art and culture as well, because not all young people play sports, but all of them benefit from some kind of activity that helps them to develop strong identity. And then we still have a clinical program, which is about our biomedical space. We have clinics in our Y centers. We have nurses that are trained to be youth-friendly and so on. We also have some medical doctors here and there to supervise and strengthen all of our clinics. We work with the Department of Health to make sure that South Africa's clinics are youth-friendly. So we have a program with the Department of Health there. And then we also have a psychosocial program, which includes gender-based violence programming. We have a program for orphaned children. We have what we call go-go getters. It's grandmothers in communities that are recruited, that are trained as support for orphaned teenagers, really to keep them safe, because orphaned teenagers are more likely to have higher odds of HIV infection than other teenagers. We also have toll-free helplines. We have two helplines, a parent line as well as a youth line. Together, those two lines reach about 60,000 people per month. And so it really is how we pulled everything together into an integrated program strategy. We strengthened our program measurement and design, which is really monitoring and evaluation, and every so often we have research that we undertake in order to monitor the impact of Love Life. So we have Y centers across. What we've also done with this strategy is to decentralize Love Life. And so we have Y centers. We have identified 15 of our Y centers that are now strengthened as the node of Love Life implementation across the country. They are in all provinces of South Africa, with some of the high population provinces having more centers than others, like Gauteng, which we used to really have a lot less presence in. We're strengthening our presence in Gauteng, we're strengthening our presence in Etiquini, we're strengthening our presence in Buffalo City, and one or two other areas. Those are the areas that, in terms of the HSRC study and the study that we've conducted, we've realized that the odds of infection continue to be high. And so those are the areas that have become major priority for us. And so I'll ask Greg Mix to just talk a little bit more about Love Life Games in the last period.
Hosong, good morning to everybody. the Love Life Games, as House Grace has indicated, speaks to the Love Life intervention in partnership with Sports and Recreation South Africa. So the priority focus, as you can see, they are an exact extract from the annual performance plan that Minister Mbalula put together for the year in review. Love Life's contribution centered on school sport, the youth camps, the national volunteer corps, the Move for Health campaigns and events, sport for social change and development, community sport, and we're also busy with the contribution on the scientific aspect of sports, just to make sure that young people we can have beyond just the normal interventions and trying to look into that. So the presentation will be responding directly to the partnership we've had with the sports and recreation, not necessarily doing their work, but doing Love Life work in that space. So in terms of mass participation, I think one of the key pillars was to make sure that we increase the quality of our programs. The numbers that you see, a total of over 300,000 young people were reached through at events with at least, almost three out of four young people, 231 of them, that completed the Love for Life Challenge program. The Love for Life Challenge program is an activity-based program that we've designed for young people at a sports event or at a sports setting. It seeks to increase their knowledge levels on the various aspects of the issues that affect them. One would be on healthy sexuality, the teenage pregnancy, alcohol and substance abuse, and hopefully today I will be able to meet with drugs with sport to also integrate the aspects that we need to make sure that young people know already on the issues which starts to use and which starts not to use, and we'll include that for the 2016 program going forward. And of that, you know, the young people, we also publicize and make them aware of the kind of support that is beyond just the face-to-face interaction on the program. Of the 239 that completed the program, we received, you know, over 38,000 young people phone calls through our psychosocial support, seeking assistance from Love Life, you know, whether it's in after hours, and mostly on issues that are, you know, about love, you know, relationships, you know, and so on and so forth. But the good thing is that at least young people in sports are also human beings, and they've been able to realize the importance of them seeking help where it's necessary. We've also designed specific magazines, which I've seen some of you have got it. I've got copies as well to share with you. The Love Life Uncut magazine includes a leaflet or a paragraph that deals with sport, and we call it Mabaleng. And that particular, you know, insertion captures an activity or an event or a sport code, but the importance of it is to be able to drive knowledge and to assist young people to know where should they go. You know, minding that the circulation of it is over 400,000, and in the most rural of the rural areas. As it is there, we've had topics, you know, in the past editions that focused on the school sport championships, allowing young people in communities to know that each one of them can also participate right through the national levels, and where does it start, you know, they need to ensure that they get the school to participate, to register, and so on. And we also looked at gymnastics, you know, as a sporting code, but with the reflection of what does it mean to a young person in school, but also guiding young people to say, if you want to participate in gymnastics as a sport, you know, who do you contact? So the contact details of Gymnastics South Africa would be then displayed into that. We also realized the importance of just taking that patent beyond just what sports education is doing so well, because we are in communities where most services are not available. Indigenous games continue to be played, but the connection between the games being played and actually the structures that are available throughout the country seems to be a gap. And we've made sure that through this particular caption, you know, even though we're speaking about the Indigenous Games, we then assist the young people to say, if you want to be part and parcel of the broader Indigenous Games and to participate in national championships, who should you contact? Who are the people that are relevant in your area? And we also looked into the life of Senzo Meyiwa, from the aspect that you can actually become something tomorrow, you know, based as of running. And very important is obviously our reach through radio as well, because it's not always that young people participate and get to interact with us at sports events. There are a number of young people that never get to see Love Life. And we've invested a lot in community radio stations and also as this SAB radio stations, with over 21 million young people reached, you know, between the ages of 11 and 24 on topics that are crafted towards helping them to become better people tomorrow, you know. And another very important aspect was for us to be able to start focusing on assisting our coaches to become true mentors. You know, we presented last year on the Coach for Life program in this particular forum, where we spoke into what it aims and the very important thing, and we've already seen signs. So of that group, 316, you know, coaches in the school sports setting were trained on the Coach for Life program, and I must say, the demand is huge. We're just battling to make sure that we can reach out to all the coaches, because each one of them then realized that actually, you know, I might be even losing a lot of athletes because I wasn't focusing on the soft things on these young people. And some, I mean, we've spoken to the relationship between the coach and the players, sometimes even more powerful than the relationship between the parent and the child. You know, so the coach needs to be playing that additional parental role, but you need to train them because they're coming from a sporting background. Their objective is to make sure they put a team that wins, but it's very important to know that for you to have a team, you need to have the human beings that are health sound and are able to be educated so they can be available tomorrow. So it's very, been very, very important. And linked to that was us identifying the people that are important in assisting to send the message, the correct message, the good message. So we've recruited almost 14 role models and retained them to be motivators, to be guest speakers at sports event. So in my slides, you'll be able to see some of the pictures of the role models that we have been working with in the past financial year. As you can see, the first picture there is a Love Life groundbreaker, and he's taking the young people through the Love for Life challenge. So it's like a maze, but involves more young people. So you lose the question, you get punished. The punish is more physical. you're able to, you know, to push us to do this and this. But very interactive. In answering questions, you have to discuss the answers. So this is how it is. You can see the energy levels there. And these are young people from Limpopo province, and that we're on a break and therefore participating in the program. So in between games, they're able to engage on very constructive learning areas. On the upper picture, it's Ezekiel Sipeng. He was addressing learners as well on the importance of staying clean, you know, staying away from drugs. And in the lower picture, there is Caster Senior, is also taking keen interest in assisting Love Life to send a message across. And he was very, very keen in engaging with the ones that are already 12-year-old and myself, just to share to them that it only begins there. And you know, anybody has the potential. It's just a question of how resilient you become. In terms of the youth camps, you know, we were invited by Sports and Recreation South Africa to participate in reshaping the youth camps program. We have been constructively responsible for the curriculum of the youth camps, designing the look and feel, the clothes, and making sure that we implement the training of the youth camps. And I must say, between 2012, 2013, and 2014, you know, I can only smile. I mean, today we're sitting with 9 youth leaders that have been elected by the young people themselves, so representing the voice of young people going forward. Because the youth camp's objective is to make sure that young people are actually trained to lead themselves constructively on issues of social cohesion and whatsoever. And we've had these youth camps in all 9 provinces, and a total of 2,151 young leaders were trained on a very rigorous and a very entertaining program. And I'm quite, you know, every time I look and back, so each of the provinces have had to nominate leaders, come up with a theme, and we're looking forward that this year there will be less and less old people designing how the youth camps look like. It's going to be young people guiding it and being in the leadership, obviously guided by Love Life because of our extensive understanding of how young people are, and we're very proud of this particular contribution. In terms of the National Volunteer Corps, we've been training a number of old people, but in particular, a total of 510 community health workers. At Love Life, we've got groundbreakers that are responsible for ensuring that the country gets to play. You know, they organize the recreational activities throughout. But the problem has been so, maybe in demand, so much so that we felt it's important to allow other constituencies. And in particular, Department of Health has got community health workers that are responsible for rehabilitating patients and whatsoever. And out of that group, you can see down there, these are staff members that have been trained on the recreation program. You know, recreation has been a buzzword in many aspects. Sometimes it's even difficult to point out what it is actually. So we've contextualized it, we've simplified it, we've put up a manual that is doable using bespoke, very easy to use activities, and these are the people that we then trained. We were supposed to have moved on to train the athletes that have retired, but you know, obviously the security issues have delayed this particular program because the vetting that is necessary. So we are waiting for that to be completed by Sports and Recreation South Africa so that we can train them, one, on recreation so that they can actually interact with young people on a general, but secondly, on the Coach for Life program, which is very, very important for them to contextualize and be able to contribute meaningfully on the issues that are involving young people. On the Move for Health campaigns, Love Life was a key partner in the national 2014 Sports and Recreation Big Walk that took place at the Fountains, with over 6,000 people that participated in that program. We were responsible for the health and sexuality programming, implementing a number of activities beyond just the walk, just to make sure that the people that are participating, old or young, had the opportunity to get programs of Love Life. We moved on to decentralize this particular big group because we want to get the country to play. So throughout the Love Life Y centers, a total of 9 health walks were implemented by groundbreakers. And I want to emphasize the importance. These particular walks were done by Love Life groundbreakers, young people, but doing it according to book, ensuring that the Safety and Recreation Act is implemented to the key. You know, going about going to the police stations, as part and parcel of their portfolio on the general management course, which Australia has spoken to earlier on. And we're very proud to see that, you know, young people take responsibility. So what you see there is a walk that took place in Freiburg in the northwest. I could have used another one. So so I felt this one is much clearer. Sport for Social Change, I've spoken a little bit around the recreational leagues. It is very, very important. I think the lower you go, the more details you become in communities, you realize the gap between organized sports and the communities you're supposed to be serving. Now, Love Life Groundbreakers are in all these community settings, where in most instances, there is not even any event other than what is offered by the schools nearby. And if there is, it's one club that's got an interest to serve only a group of 25 to 30 people, and that never changes for the past 10, 15 years, because it's just a group of people that I click. You know, so that's closing out to the number of young people that could be participating. We've gone on to say, you know, we need to train our groundbreakers to contribute onto the active nation that we so want to see as a country. And a total of 401 recreational leagues were organized by groundbreakers with a total of 4,677 teams. Now, this ranges from five-a-side soccer to Mkuku Function. Now, Mkuku Function is a very interesting game. You know, one day I would get our colleagues in Parliament to play Mkuku Function. It's a very interesting game where we can use anything just to run, but it assists you, you know, to be fit. You know, it deals with issues of cheating. There's just so many aspects. And, you know, I've just received a report last week that at one athletics event in KZN that took place on Saturday, young people that had finished to play and were knocked out came back the following day just for the Mkuku Function. Just for the Mkuku Function. So it was a competing activity in an organized sports setting. So out of that, and again, we reached out to over 66,000 young people that participated and registered in these continuous leagues in communities, which is a very, very important achievement, and we would like to continue doing that. So what you see bottom there is a group of those young people that were participating, preparing to play in a hockey akasi. So it's a hockey that you play with your hand and a tennis ball, because it's not only that you find hockey sticks and hockey balls and hockey facilities, but being able to be innovative and you're able to identify talent in that particular area, you can bring it into the structures going forward. Community sport, out of the partnership with sports education, we have got a total of 19 sport-specific groundbreakers that are funded by sports education who are responsible for driving the sport programs at Love Life Y Centers. And out of that, we were fortunate to have 17 sport clubs established by young people that put together constitutions and registered in the local leagues. And I must point out once again the importance of allowing young people to stay, take the lead. Back in the days, we had clubs that were administered by old people, sometimes teachers, and we realized the number of young people are not exposed to all the key elements that are important for youth development. And I think the only way we can close the vacuum is about training young people to take it themselves. And out of this particular Y centers, we've had clubs that have got chairpersons who are perhaps 17, 18 years old, who understand how the constitution works, what are minutes, sorting out the league program and, you know, all the things that are necessary to run a club from that early age. And my view is that in the next 10 years, we'll be seeing a new breed of sport leaders, whether administrators, referees, because they've been given a platform to be able to do that. And I think we should be doing that en masse throughout the country. We also have realized, I think, we'll also speak to a little bit on the challenges that we've had. And the picture that you see there, the bottom, it's young people that we're about to participate in the coaching clinic at the Royal Bafokeng Y Center, you know, on basketball. Now you can see the numbers. They came in numbers so that at least they can make to the top three teams because they realize how important it is for them to participate. And the lady in the middle there is the groundbreaker responsible for the screening of them. We have got Y centers that have been built 10, 15 years ago, and the advent of the Sports Education Act, it meant that we need to relook on the facilities, you know, particularly on the strategic niche, because most of the schools in the areas where the Y centers are don't have the facilities that are within the Love Life Y Center, i.e. basketball, netball, volleyball, and we felt we need to build these facilities, upgrade them to meet the requirements so that at least the schools, you know, we don't have to be increasing and duplicating infrastructure and building it. You know, they can use the Y centers to participate in that. We have enlisted 6 of the Y centers, and I must say the work is currently underway to be able to develop and implement of that. You know, the cost of building vary from one area to another, particularly because of the requirements that we have been. And it's been a challenge for us in terms of budgetary to try and make sure that we're able to do that all at once. In terms of research, LabLife has gone into partnership with the Human Science Research Council. Professor Pamela Naidu, as we sit here today, there is a conference that's taking place, and again, you know, groundbreaking in the sense that there's been a lot of research that's been done on young people across everything else. And in partnership with the Sports Education, we identified opportunities that we have in trying to use extreme sport, you know, if it can assist us to establish, you know, if we can use to rehabilitate young people that are affected by substance abuse. The first, you know, baseline study was done here in Cape Town. We went into Miesenbeck in 2013 with a group of just 14, you know, athletes, and most of them indicated that had they had the opportunity to participate in such, in the deep surfing, some of them had never been into the ocean or let alone being on a boat. And I can tell you today, out of the 14 that were there, 3 are now full-time surfers and they've stopped, you know, being in drugs, and we hope it stays like that. So we've gone on a more detailed research process, and that will be taking place this year, going on possibly for the next 3 years, so we can really, really look into these opportunities. If that happens, our opportunities as a country become beyond just biomedical interventions for young people affected by substance abuse. We could use sport as one of those areas. And I think for us, you know, it's such an important aspect because it deals with the area that affects young people. You know, that's where it starts. If you can stop it from there, it will give us the opportunity to be able to do that. So the challenges, LabLife has been massively embraced by the sports fraternity, and that creating a high demand for our services throughout the country. Our groundbreakers come across as being burnt out because during the week they are implementing programs. Saturday, Sunday, they are expected to be supporting sports events where the young people are participating. And, you know, we've responded to the demand we've created, the impression that we can, but we need resources to be able to provide as many young people that can assist South Africa to become better. And that to us is an issue. And that's within the budget that we currently have. We are limited to the number of groundbreakers that you can retain into the program. And I think more strategic you know, ideas then would welcome from parliamentarians on how can we assist LabLife to have as many groundbreakers, because the more groundbreakers we can have, the less young people we find in the prisons, in the drug centers and whatsoever. So the opportunities far outweigh the current challenges that we have, if we can collaboratively look at opportunities to be able to do that. Again, we've noted that you know, our groundbreakers is about 1,200 and odd, and each groundbreaker must invite a total of 5 MPs to work with him or her for the calendar year. You know, the MPs are not currently paid. You know, even though we assist them with you know, stipends to be able to travel from one point to another, but because they're not getting any remuneration whatsoever, it's very difficult for us to sustain them, and that's leading to high turnover, again, due to our financial constraints. Instead, strategies are currently being investigated to meet the challenge, and we also contribute towards youth employment. You know, the more young people that we can engage on this problem, the better it is. We've had, you know, some successes in other provinces where the provincial government will look into the EPWP program to then use that to employ, which is, you know, Northwest Social Development being but just one. However, we so wish it could be the same with all the provinces, with all this, and because then we will be talking of a number of young people that are currently in an employed setup, because the major problem is extremely structured. You would even, you know, sometimes confuse it for a full-time job, the way we administer this as an organization. It's such an important thing. So we would appreciate assistance in making sure that we can break the barriers that somehow, you know, inhibit. I think we have got a contribution we can make in getting young people. You know, sometimes, even though the funds have been put across, you know, through all departments, I'm not too sure if we all agree on what the purpose of these young people. And I think as an organization, we could give a real meaning, you know, to those young people deployed in the particular areas that we are. I've already spoken to the age and infrastructure when I was speaking to you, but it is an issue that we would love More so now, we have got new areas that we want to move into. You know, China is immensely impacted by the Nyaupes, the young people. We don't have a Y center, so we need to build one. We don't have a Y center in the Johannesburg CBD area, and if we can put together the young people that are converging into Johannesburg year in, year out, I think the premier's speech, the past 2 weeks ago, cited to the number of young people that come into the city looking for job opportunities. And we believe as an organization, we can help contribute by re-engineering them to be skilled people so they can at least find work. You know, and if you don't have a point that we can, you know, an infrastructure that we can use to educate them, reskill them, it becomes a problem for us. Okay? So the areas that we'll be going to is Swane and Tegwini, where we'll be looking for, and so is the Johannesburg, where we're looking for new wire centers. The financials are in the pack, but I'm going to connect the chief financials, chief financial officers' laptop quickly, just so that we can speak from the same.
So, thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. My name is Linda. I'm the CFO for Love Life. I'm going to take you through the Love Life financial performance. You have in front of you there the Love Life financial statements for 2013. With comparatives for 2012. So what I have on the presentation is basically the split that talks to the funding that came from Department of Sports and Recreation, the split between the support costs or the administrative costs, the program costs, and the total costs. So if you look on the presentation, the third column, because you don't have this information, this is just to give you the background. This is the one that speaks to the funding that came through to Love Life of 33.3 million for 2013. And you'll see that this number is the one that is reflected in your annual financial statements under the incomes schedule that you have. So this is basically to give you the summary and the breakdown of that number. Right. So you have the documents. I'm told you have the documents as supplemented. I thought you didn't have. So the next slide talks to the 2014, similar explanation that I've mentioned. You don't have, you also have, I think, the summary of the 2014. The 2014 accounts are going to be authorized for publication on the 26th of March. So at this point, they have been audited. The audit close of meeting was yesterday. There are no major issues, and Love Life has actually been given an unqualified audit report going forward. Issues that are very critical to the organization, like going concern, have all been verified. And so we are happy to actually share with you these results as well. So you'll see again the summary of the funding that came through to Love Life of 34.9 million at the bottom there, and it is the same one that you will see in the audited financial statements for 2014. In terms of the 2013 financial statements that talk to the annual report that you have in front of you, what I would like to highlight is the net surplus of, sorry, okay, on the income, on the statement of financial position that you see, what is very important perhaps for you to note in 2013 is the fact that Love Life is still a going concern, and that it was declared as such by the end of the audit. The solvency ratios or the liquidity ratio of 1.26 was the one that we had at the closing of 2013, and the solvency ratio was at 2.48. Our total assets versus the liabilities or the amount of money that we owed to the suppliers. I think that is the highlight that you can get from that slide. In terms of the 2014 performance, again, you'll see that it is the same solid performance with a current ratio of 1, having declined a little bit, and I will explain the decline as I speak to the 2014 income statement. But again, the...
I don't have that document, or maybe they can direct us which one they're referring to.
Okay, so so you don't have that document. I'm so sorry. Yes. So I think the only thing that I can do now is to actually talk to the 2013. The point is that the 2013 you will have it. Here it's actually reflected as a comparative. So you have the 2013 in the annual financial statement. Okay.
Okay, I'm sure the questions are going to be raised out of what you have just said. Seemingly, members have seen a gap, and if, let me not disturb you, we'll talk about what we don't have it now. Continue.
Okay.
I'm sure surely you see that it even disturbed you, because the information is all not with us. And if you are talking, you will be talking to yourself, will be listening. Because if you talk on the paper, which you don't have, will be just listening. I'm suspecting you see the dilemma.
Okay, so I'm so sorry with the confusion that is on the information that you have versus the information that I have. So I'll, with all due respect, I think then end the discussion. The only information that is on this slide that you perhaps have is what is summarized in the annual financial statements for 2013 that are audited that you have with you. So if there are going to be any questions pertaining to the finances for Love Life, then they should be on the 2013, and I will respond to those.
Just want to continue? Okay. Honorable members, Grace, do you want us to discuss your trip presentation, or are you done?
Honorable Chair, yes, that brings us to the end of the presentation. We also only had a video just to give you a sense of what Love Life looks like, but we can take questions now if that is what you prefer, and then we can show you the video afterwards or any other way.
Yes, I'm suspecting, because already Sports Trust, they are with us. According to the time scheduled, we need to start with them. It's 11 a.m. So let's, honorable members, let's thank the presentation of Live Life. Now this is time that we must engage as a committee, not for getting that. Our mandate is to do what we're doing today, because we know that 2013, 2014 financial year
we have received about 33 million, yes. So we'll be engaging you in the slides that you are giving us, and we'll be asking questions even if we are not presenting everything, but back in our minds we know that you have that amount from Sport and Recreation. Honorable members, this is your time that you must engage the presentation. Any hands? Honorable Abrahams, Honorable Bachman, Honorable Musi, Honorable Manana, Honorable Malajwe, on that order. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and thank you to the presentations for the informative presentations. Thank you. I've just noted that you've got an extensive cell phone communication. How big is your database on that? And then also the sports facilities that was established, in which provinces was that established? And why things is renovation? And I've noted here your income, you've received quite grants from various departments. The Department of Health, Sports, Rec, Social Development, KwaZulu-Natal, DSD, and so on. What is the purpose of me not seeing any logos of these various departments on your documents? Do you have a partnership? Is there any legislation that prevents you from actually advertising that where you get your funding from? Because it looks like Love Life is an entity on their own, although when you go into the financials, you see that lottery and everybody is like, you're blessed. I know you want more money, but that you receive money from all these various entities. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I must say that in terms of what you've just gone through in rebranding, I actually don't recognize your brand now anymore, and obviously that would be so because of the rebranding exercise. But I think it's taken us away from what it is you do. So I think you're appealing more to the corporates than to the youth, and to, you know, you're appealing more for sponsorship than for actually getting more youth to participate. In terms of the trust, the Love Life Trust, how is that monitored? You know, I mean, I always see trusts in the sports arena or the health arena. It's almost like another layer, and it's another conduit for receiving monies, where you almost have to do double work trying to monitor how that money is spent from the trust over the normal, you know, the mainstream account there. While you were talking, in terms of multi-purpose, your wife centres, I was thinking, you're coming into Tshwane, you're coming into Joburg, you're coming into the urbanised areas now, why reinvent the wheel when there's multi-purpose centres and regional centres that already exist? You know, you seem to be able to spend money quicker than the cities can spend their money, so why don't we go into a partnership where if they're not going to be spending their MEG grants on sports and recreation, we can do some sort of a venture where we can make that what they've already got existing more productive. So let's say it's a case of a multi-purpose center in, let's say, an area like Klipfontein View, where you've got a court that can't be, you've got a court already, but it cannot be maintained by the city. And they've got a multi-purpose center, but there's never enough productive activities taking place. Love Life can come in there at a tenth of the price, a tenth of the time, because the infrastructure already exists, and make that more productive. In terms of your financial statements, there's just something, it's very small, but it's, you know, I'm pretty sensitive to the changes in financial statements. And when you look at your 2013 figures, what you've printed in your lovely magazine and what you've given us from the auditor, in terms of the one figure specifically, page seven of this handout, is we look at non-controlling interest, there's a difference in figures. It's a slight figure, but it's a change. The trust capital, which is obviously too small to be mentioned in the magazine, which has, you know, it's 100 rand, but there's in terms of what I'd say, the figure, what you call figure shuffling or figure reconciling, you've got to change in both current liability and the trade and other payables, and you've got to change in the non-controlling interest. The total amounts the total amount of funds and liabilities and under consolidated 2013 figures. Are you, can you see where I'm? So that page 7, and on your funds, yeah, it's page 54 and page 7.
Okay, continue, honorable member.
Okay,
so we will respond on that.
I'm just saying that your accumulated income is slightly different. That's giving also your trade and other payables a different figure, which in turn translates to a different total equity and liability. Slight, but it is a difference. Thank you.
Next one.
Thank you, Chairperson. Inspector Chairperson, not that I'm opposing what my colleagues have been said by welcoming the presentation. I'm a kind of a person that I don't say this is correct if it's wrong. And I don't say this is wrong if it's correct. Chairperson, we did receive the presentation. It's a good one, and but the financial statement, because we're just getting, I can say it's stumped because we just got 2 pages, and I will take the apology to our honorable colleagues that it's incomplete, I can say, because if I receive 2 pages, in fact, you're supposed to receive all these documents before you arrive here. But you just received these 2 pages, which is incomplete. So my request to Love Life Chairperson, I will urge Love Life to intensify support in rural areas. And my question is that how much have you allocated, although we did not receive the complete financial statement, but hopefully I'll get an answer on that. How much have you allocated in rural areas? That is question number one. And number two, how much did you invest in both cultural and school events? And what is your relationship with the provincial arts and culture department? Since we know that you are focusing on HIV and AIDS, and we can see some of the provinces, you've been reduced it, and the Love Life, if I can say this, in my I'm from rural areas. I only know the branding of Love Life, but it's not visible. The only person I know who is working for Love Life is Amos Mdluli. He is the only one who is visible that he represents the Love Life. That's the only person I know. Because sometimes we are having these events, you'll never even see Love Life there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got very few questions here, but I just want to tell Chairperson, we have seen the graph that showed an upright growth of the number of young people that Love Life have seen, but we do not actually see the same graph that shows, you know, the decline of HIV infection as a result of the interaction thereof. I understand Chris explained it that they protect themselves at young age, but at a later stage they become careless. But we would need to see, you know, the graph of that. The other question, Chairperson, that I want to Chris to elaborate upon on is of the academy. I just wanna check where the academy is, who is in that academy, what is the criteria or the criterion used to have people in that academy. The other question, Chair, is that I know LoveLife is working with the Department of Health. I have seen in my constituency that a number of young people are using the subdermal implants that the minister spoke about, that the minister said it should be used in conjunction with other protection measures like the condom for both male and female. But we have seen again that they tend to use it, you know, just the implants alone, and they don't protect themselves. But I've seen again in my constituency that they would put it, you know, in 2-3 weeks they would come and remove it. And I just want LoveLife to note that and perhaps interact more with the Department of Health as what to do on that. So my last question is that we have also seen the success that they do as a result of, you know, them interacting or interacting with young people through the radio. But I'm not sure whether you use the television, you know, optimally, because you know they would also want to see that on television in a form of sort of a program. And thank you, Chairperson.
Who's next? Mutega and Malad.
Thanks, Chair, and let us welcome the presentation from LoveLife. My question is one. I'm like Manan, I'm from rural areas, and I rarely see the activities of LoveLife. And I'm not saying they are not working, but I'm seeing where I come from, I don't see. My question is this: how do the public sports associations and the youth clubs, more especially from rural communities, how do they access the help from LoveLife? So that's my most important question. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. My first question is based on the 150,000 allocation that LoveLife got from the FIFA Legacy Fund. I'd appreciate an explanation on what that was used for. And two is, given the 500,000 donation that I see you got from Penthouse, I just want to find out where does LoveLife stand in terms of alcohol advertising, given, you know, the ongoing discussion initiated by the Minister of Health with regard to the banning of alcohol advertising to reduce severe levels of alcohol consumption. And related to that is where LoveLife stands with regard to random doping test of school athletes, and what's the position there, and whether they've had engagements with either the Department of Basic Education and the South African Institute of States. And to further explain the rationale for the overdraft for 14 million, what was the thinking around there and what informed that? And lastly, in terms of the 15 LoveLife centers, I think one would appreciate more an outline of their geographic locations, because and this is the sentiment expressed by the previous three colleagues, that they seem to be skewed more so in urban areas, the activities of LoveLife. And if you can have a plan, if we can have input as to whether there is a focused program targeted to young people specifically in marginalized and poor communities, because it's a different market compared to what happens in townships and more urban areas. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Let me take this opportunity to thank the presentation and hoping that you will be responding. But I do have also some few questions You know, as I'm sitting there, when we started to be an official committee of sports and recreation, what we've noticed, 20 years down the line, we don't see transformation in rural areas. I'm suspecting it's, you are one of the entities that will assist us in about these 5 years that you are in this office, not any longer to complain that we don't see a transformation. You are part of the department that you must assist, that we must agree that we have done ABC in our rural communities. I'm echoing that as I'm sitting here, we are all passionate about our provinces. We must not be ashamed of that. Everyone of this committee, firstly, he or she checked what is going on in my province, and then Uche must look at an overall national what is going on in the sport national, and how are these entities assisting by a budget that they are getting from sport. You know that we are the only department that has got little of our budget. I don't want to refer to other people who are given 15% that they don't use accordingly, especially with this infrastructure, school sport. But as I'm sitting here, when I'm looking, honorable members, even to my province, the presentation, really, I'm seeing that I don't have specific thing that I can say I'm proud that in my province I've seen what you are doing live, except that when you are talking Buffalo City, it's a township. There are rural areas in the Eastern Cape. If we can talk of KZN, according to even our budgets that are spread, KZN is a rural province, number one. I can't mention Gauteng, that I'm talking about the rural KZN, Eastern Cape, Northwest, Limpopo. So I'm saying all those provinces, when we are here as representatives of from those provinces, most of the time we don't hear, we don't see how this sport is assisted. We know that we've got a role to play as a sport, as a body, but these entities will ask, we're not saying that this is the end of the world. We are a new committee that will be here for 5 years. We're expecting that these 5 years we must have one journey to transform sport in our rural areas. You know, I know that there are things that are aging. You call it your Bizana, your Amchata. I'm saying that as I'm sitting here, I don't know where is this problem, your Gogo, in rural areas. Really, it's a very good program. I've seen Gogo Base Gauteng, hey man, Gogo Base Dolopin, they're always doing what we are doing, which is very good. But as no Gogo in our rural areas that would love, not condemning you, that as from today, we are hearing what we want is this committee. If it's not in your program, you must rethink that we'll accept what you are doing. What we are saying that we don't say that those people who are staying in urban, because majority of us were relocating because of this problem of not developing the rural areas. We're staying in urban areas, taking our kids in multiracial schools because they got everything in connection with the sport. I won't say it again. Would love that each of us, we must confirm and confess as time goes on until 5 years, think that, hey, Love Life, now we are on it. go and check your program and against what you are asking. I don't want to talk about monies, because these monies all are from one government. You're getting them from this hand and the other hand. I'm suspecting members, they are right. This is the first time, this is the first day that we invited you. Down the line, September, we'll call you and check what have you done about our input, our request. We do hear that your challenges. Our challenge with the sport, rural areas are very neglected. Sport trust, maybe we'll talk other language when we are here, because some of us with a whip sports trust were seeing that they are getting there, but not 100%. Would love that when we are coming back, you must tell us, what are you going to do to our own provinces? I don't want to hear that you have done in Gauteng and Eastern Cape. I would love to see that 9 provinces, rural areas, the report must come in this committee, in order that you must say, there you are, now a social cohesion, we see it. With those words, I'm saying that you are about to call another presentation immediately at 11. Can you respond? And I'm thanking you. We are welcoming you. We're not aware what you are doing. Now we do aware, but you still have gaps with this committee. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, all of that well taken. I do want to say that perhaps we're not visible, but really 40% of our income is invested in rural areas. The thing about rural areas is that they are not connected. So if you are in Bizana, you're not necessarily visible in the town next to Bizana. But we have audited evidence that 40% of the places that we work in is rural areas. It was very important to us. But I hear what you are saying. I do also just want to tell you that our Gogo Getter program was initiated by a group of Gogos in Ethembeni in the Eastern Cape. It's a rural area, ma'am. And it is those Gogos who came to us. They were working around the clinic. And they said, we keep seeing this love life. We want to find a way of getting involved.
My wish, because he's from Gauteng. I've said Eastern Cape is very huge. I cannot be told about the Ethembeni only. With the biggest rural area, I'm appreciate. We are the attack on the that.
We do take the appeal, though, we take it seriously, and in September we'll tell you what we were able to do, because we do also have, as you were saying, financial constraints, but I take it unreservedly. Yes, the Y centers are in all of the provinces. I can count or look maybe in the annual report and tell you exactly where they are. There are 23 Y centers. We've just taken 15 of them, and we've made them the hub of Love Life implementation. So we've just basically strengthened Love Life across the country so that we decentralize. And that is because our research information we cannot generalize the whole country. We find that we actually have to have 15 strong bases so that we respond to the issues coming from the ground. That is why the 15. But, I mean, I can sit and count if you like, but yeah, there's 23.
Retain information on that, in order that we must be happy. Page, if we have done that. Just never mind, talk to us, we'll check.
Okay.
We don't have time.
Yes, ma'am. The overdraft on 14 million, on page 28, they are the Y Center. They are mapped across the country. On the overdraft of 14 million,
we have found that as more of our money, as a proportion, comes from government, and the government, we don't get the money on time. So we wait for many months, even though agreements are in place for funding, we wait many, many months for the finances to come to Lablas. We employ 300 people and 1,300 groundbreakers. We cannot not pay them their salary because we're still waiting for money. So we've had to have an agreement with our bank to have the overdraft facility in order that we continue, you know, we retain consistency. Where do we stand? We've considered the issue of our position on working with the alcohol industry very, very seriously. It's not an easy thing. We've had real difficulties, philosophical difficulties about this. And the issue is that we don't take advertising money. We do not take advertising. We don't take money as sponsorship at all. With the money that we get, that is our policy at the moment. So Brand House or any other alcohol company cannot put on their website that they give money to Love Life, neither can they put their logos or anything. So it's not sponsorship at all. It's the 1% net profit after tax that the law requires that every company in South Africa must contribute to social issues. Having said that, this is something that we continue to grapple with. I have to be very honest. In 2014, we considered it carefully, because sometimes there's a fine line in the area of corporate social responsibility versus sponsorship. The FIFA Legacy Trust, so we have two FIFA partnerships. FIFA has, they had a Football for Hope programs. They built 20 centers linked to the 2010 World Cup investment in South Africa. Two of those centers were built in partnership. So the 20 centers were on the continent. Two of those centers were built in partnership with Love Life. One in Kwakwa, which I think is a rural area, and another one in Kimberley, which was launched last week. So the 150,000 per annum goes towards the running costs of these centers. It pays for one or two things. I'd like Rex Max to come and respond to the issue of how the sports clubs access help from Love Life. I'll go on to the television. It's purely, it's two things. The first one is our understanding of how young people consume media communication. But to be honest with you, the main reason is that in terms of cost, television is much more expensive. With radio, we have the infrastructure, we have studios, we do our own productions in partnership with SABC. So it's not been a very expensive exercise for us to produce radio programs. Television is very expensive. But secondly, young people listen to radio. I know they channel hop on radio, and then they are on their cell phones. So we decided that for increasing our returns on investment, we should rather be concentrated in those two areas. From time to time, we have some SABC activity in Azigelezeni and Bonaripa in partnership with a company called Vizelela, but it's not much. And the thing with television is you miss it because there are so many channels, you know. So for us, it became important that we invest in radio and cell phones much stronger. Thank you so much about the information on the subdermal implant. It's new. So we're all sort of tracking what the trends are, what is going on. It'd be very, very interesting to understand why did they take out the implants in a few months. We also worked with the Department of Health. We designed and produced the dual protection campaign. And so, you know, dual protection is not easy. I mean, young people just want an easy way out. So, but that is most welcome, and I appreciate it. Thank you very much. The academy is so we don't have one. It's not a structure. It is
all of Love Life, particularly these 15 centers that I've described, each and every one of them have a training facility where the training takes place. So what we mean by the academy is a team of Loveland people. They used to be our training department in the past. So as we registered, made the content that we are training on accredited, we actually have to be registered as a separate entity. So all of the training that we do there is accredited, including the Coach for Life that Rex Max was talking about, that we train coaches to be adult allies for young people who participate in sports. Also, that content is also accredited. So the academy is really not one physical structure. We're sort of looking to explore, you know, we are going to need one or two facilities. We were looking in the Eastern Cape, in PE, and one or two other places where facilities are easily available. The relationship between the scale-up of Love Life and HIV incidence. So even though I'm talking about a very steep scale-up, the incidence of HIV has not gone, we didn't include that graph here. We tried to keep certain things out because we thought it would be too much information. There really is a good relationship between the scale-up of Love Life and the decline of HIV incidence among young people. A few of them continue to become infected in their early 30s. But Love Life was only started 15 years ago. So really where most HIV infections are, which is the mid-30s, are not people who are likely to have participated in Love Life at all. I just don't have a thing that will give me the direct relationship as you were saying. But it's important to us that whatever gains we get in adolescent years, that those gains are sustained. So I can't tell you for sure, but I can see that the relationship is, the new infections are still there, but not at the same rate as it used to be in the past. And then Rexmex will also talk about the school sports events and the partnership with provincial departments, because he will have greater detail. Linda will talk about the finances. If I may just go on to talk about why reinvent the wheel where there are underused facilities. We would love to get access to underused facilities because we have found that some of these areas have facilities, but because they don't have programming, they end up being vandalized and so on. We would love to get strong partnerships with municipalities. We really, really are looking for that. And if there's any way that this committee can help in that way, we will deeply, deeply appreciate it, because that is what we would rather not spend our money on infrastructure, because we're good at programs and we would like to keep it that way. The trust is not established as if it was a bit of a sideline separate from the central organization. Love Life is registered as a trust, as a not-for-profit trust. There isn't any other organization apart from Love Life as a non-profit trust. It's the same with the academy. The academy is also registered as a trust. Both these entities are also registered as non-profit organizations. Both of these entities, Love Life at least is also a PBO, the public benefit organization, so we have income tax commitments. We don't think we're exempted, but that's still, you know, we still have commitments in terms of the Income Tax Act. So we have very strong monitoring systems in place. We have very strong controls. We have a very strong audit committee, which is also in the annual report. It meets once every 3 months, and we send them reports once every month. It's very closely monitored. It's not separate from the central organization. Our view is, and I suppose, you know, people can have different views about the new brand of Love Life. the constituencies we asked about the brand of Love Life is young people. It was not meant to appeal to anybody except young people. And they are the ones, the evidence that we got for the rebranding was based on what their views were. They were the ones who said that this is what it should look like to make an old logo more modern. It has nothing to do with corporate. But you know, I'm open to all kinds of feedback on this issue. The Department of Sports and Recreation is very involved in branding. Everything we do with sports and recreation is dually branded. Even t-shirts. Young people.
Sorry, honorable visitor. We're running short of time, and when I'm looking at the questions, there are so many not yet answered. For instance, if we look at the FIFA fund, the $500,000, the alcohol advertisement, the rent, dog school, and maybe. Now this question that maybe we'll be having a follow-up on overdraft, because when I was consulting, we are not guided by PFMA, but maybe corporate law has got certain amount that allowed that you can do that. I don't know, honorable members. Now we're getting to the time of another presentation. And if you can, with this last 3 minutes, touch where I've just raised that I was noting the questions, if we must try to do that. Please wait with hands. I wanted that they must round up on what I've mentioned, that I don't hear you responding in other questions. Maybe don't elaborate too much on one point. That's one other problem. We made a mistake of inviting you with another entity, which is very important. Now we're getting to their time. If you can continue, try to be brief to the point. Thank you. Honorable members, please wait. When they finish to respond, is then I will be giving you to check whether are you satisfied about your questions, do you have follow-up questions. It's very important. As I'm sitting here, I've seen that there are follow-up questions, and I don't know how are we going to manage that. It's then that you will advise me what to do. Okay.
Okay, so Honorable Chair, I did respond to the overdraft. I responded to it as a required, necessary, because the income does not come on time. I also responded to alcohol advertising. That was not sponsorship. It was corporate social responsibility, 1% net profit after tax, yes. And then RexMex is here. He will talk about partnerships with provincial departments and what proportion is invested in school sports events. He'll also talk about how do the sports club access help from Love Life.
Whilst you were away, we wanted that you must be brief to the point. We're getting to the time of another visitor of ours that we need to do justice even to themselves. Brief to the point.
Chair, thanks. Our relations with provincial government, I would say it's technically good with sports, right? However, it has not moved beyond just the events and the operations. Love Life is invited to activities that are organized, so government will contribute to pay for all expenses related to young people moving from one area to the other, to the events, and Love Life will then contribute and pay for expenses related to their program implementation. It's happening standard throughout the country. There was a question around our relationship with the Arts and Culture Department, right? We currently don't have a relationship. Equally so, we do not have the funds to execute in detail a much broader arts and culture outlay. We would love to have a partnership with the department. I think our attempts so far meant, I think I'll call it a cold response
for over a period, but it's something that we are pursuing because we believe that a number of young people that end up in drugs who could have been better singers and had better performers and whatsoever. So that one is kind of something that we are working on. The question on the sport clubs, Love Life's core role, I think, is very meticulously thought of. Our relationship with sport clubs, right, relates to us empowering young people in the Y centers to establish sports clubs that they execute in that particular area. Community clubs, they can only access our assistance when we've got coaching clinics. We would normally pay for the technical coaches that are coming from the federations, and we invite more than just Love Life people to participate in that. But there's a mix in that group as well, because we invite the schools that we work in and whatever, so that the coaching training goes beyond just what Love Life could be doing for its own members in the club within the Y Center. So we don't, we it's very, very liminal. Even from a budget perspective, it's just to make sure that we're able to sustain the club. It's about maybe 20,000 rand for a year that we put aside for just the operations of the Y Center sport activity. We want to respect the fact that that's the role of government, that's the role of the federation, and we do not interfere with regards to that. Thank you.
Linda, do you want to say something?
Okay, so the question that was raised on the summary that is on page 54 versus the what is it, financial accounts that we have, the issue there is basically the rounding up and rounding down. So these are actually summarized, and that's why you don't see even the PwC audit stamp on them. But if you look at the numbers, they're not marginally different except for the rounding up and rounding down. I'm sure the gentleman also alluded to the issue. That is the only issue. No, it's about, it will be four, where it's 4997 in the, for instance, the accumulated funds, it's listed as 42,997,000. When you look at the financials, it's 42,995,600. So it is that rounding up effect.
Honorable members, that's why we didn't compare page 7 or with page 54. The office, they've told me that they did receive the courier on Friday afternoon, and the invitation was long ago issued. We are asking our colleagues when we invite them, we're not lazy to read. We don't want to ask things that are in the document that we're supposed to see. If we are giving us your information on Friday whilst we're not in Parliament, on Monday is a constituency day and the documents we're just receiving today, we're cautioning that it must not happen again, because it's taking a lot of our time of e-commit, because we are raising things that are in the documents that we didn't read and we didn't see. I know some other people, and when they are coming to present in the committees, they are thinking that we cannot read or we are lazy. It's not all the committees. It's not all of us. We like to read, to ask relevant questions, because when we are calling anyone, we need to get information in order not to ask something which is written black and white. With those words, I'm saying that I'll note few hands before we are thanking you again. I've seen Honorable Malaz, I've seen Honorable Abraham, I'm seeing Honorable Mutega, Honorable Manana. Just One second, honorable members.
Thanks, Chair. There was an outstanding response to a question I asked regarding their position on random testing of school athletes.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I wanted to propose that the unanswered questions be responded in writing for time saving. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I think maybe if they can improve on the communication and marketing, it will be much more better. Because if you're looking at the centers, they are almost everywhere. But really, we don't see the activities or whatever. So maybe I think the marketing and communication may be the big problem. If you can check Eastern Cape, it's got about 5 centers. So, but really, they must just improve on that department, I think. Thanks.
Just a second, Chairperson, just to assist my colleague for the corrections, because she has been recorded, she said 23 Y centers, and on the document it's written 22. I don't know if I'm seeing the correct document. Last week in Kimberley.
To me, I'm still a chairperson. I'm jealous about the power. Do you want that they must respond on your question just now? Do you support what Honorable Abraham is saying, that if they can respond on a second,
Lovelife does not do doping tests. It's a competency of SAIS.
Yeah. Through you, I think I'd appreciate the return response, but the response is misdirected to the question. It wasn't about the mandatory test. It's about their position with regard to the testing of school athletes.
Opportunity to say that we didn't do it justice on this day. The one other factor is that we didn't read documents. The second one, we've called two entities on one day. Seemingly, honorable members, it doesn't assist that thing to cloud our day. We're apologizing about that also, because the way that we've rushed you because of other people who are already here, we are learning as a new committee that all our entities are very important, and especially that if it's the first time to call you, we need to do it justice, because we have your challenges. We need to respond to the challenges, seeing how are we going to assist. We need to input on your presentation, saying what do you see us assisting. I'm suspecting we didn't do it justice. Even ourselves were apologizing by doing that. But next time, your documents must come early on Monday of the other week. This committee is always sitting on Tuesday. The slot of this committee is Tuesday. So the staff of this committee, they've circulated the invitation to our good self to show that they invited you long ago. So it must not happen. But at least now we'll get used of communicating with you, and we'll check with our areas, those things that are in our provinces. We are a new committee. We don't want to hear by any other person. So today you have told us where you have done ABC, but you are still maintaining that if you are going to a Port Elizabeth, a Buffalo seat, we'll be getting only really the townships. There are very few farm dwellers. So we want to correct that. We do want them to get some things, but we are pleading for our rural areas. We've heard that in some of our areas you do have, but it's not enough. You did tell us about the constraints that we are having. We cannot bash you, but we want to sit and check how can we minimize the development in the urban areas whilst we are complaining in the rural areas. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and the member. Thank you.
Super Sport. Oh. I like Super Sport because they've assisted me a lot, and to you, Sport Trust. The Sport Trust must come that you know why I'm saying super sport, because most of the teams that we are assisting us is through super sport. Some of us were not knowing you. We are apologizing about this problem that you are having. Fortunately, you came very early and you've seen our problem. Surely you know we love life, and if it's our first time, we needed to do it justice with them. They've got good, what you call, programs that we need to be part of those programs. I've seen in front of me that Kukona Umizi Maxwell Jordan, interim chairman, is he in here? Okay, welcome. Mrs. Anita Matthews, executive director, is she in here? Okay, thank you. Mr. Simanga Macholeni, project manager, thank you. Somebody who just joined us in our visit, honorable member, who our gang is owing us with some promises in Limpopo. Is he here? Yes, yes, yes. And then Mr. Tutus Kosana, is it here? Thank you, honorable visitors of ours. We are apologizing to take your time. Just get to your briefing. We have welcomed you. Thank you so much.
Good morning, and thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. It is good for us to come and account for what we do at the Sports Trust, because we do realize that we are dealing with public money, and it is correct that we account for what we do. So without much ado, I'll hand over to our executive director, Mrs. Anita Matthews, to take us through the presentation. Hopefully it was delivered in time to this committee. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair, and the members of the committee for inviting us. As we, our chairperson has said, to account for the funding that we received from government as well as from the corporate sector to be able to change lives in South Africa. We have sent the presentation, and I think for some of the members it would just be proper for us to take you back to where the Sports Trust started, and I'll try and run through that very quickly, and then I'll hand over to my colleagues who heads up the various departments within the Sports Trust to give you insight of what the Sports Trust has been delivering over the past few years. Okay, thank you. The Sports Trust was really the brainchild of the late Minister Steve Tshwete, and it was launched in 1995 with the corporate sector, the government sector, and then as well as codes from the sports sector, with the mandate to look at addressing the imbalance of sports infrastructure, sports equipment and kit. And the past 3 years, we've now also added project facilitation to that mandate of ours. We really, the founding member was there for the Department of Sports and Recreation under the leadership of the late minister, as I said. And we're also a non-profit organization with public benefit status, as well as a Section 8A, as the lady from Love Live alluded, that we draw our funding, some of our funding from the corporate responsibility, 1% that they're donating to social development through various sectors. So that's where some of our funding comes from, besides government. In terms of our governance, we have a board of trustees that are represented by each of the corporate sector members, and then also by government, as well as the sports sector that serves on our board. Our processes for delivering our deliverables is quite simplistic due to the fact that we deal a lot with the communities as well as the man on the street that wants to be involved in sport, and we follow a process of 3 quotations. We have an annual audit by KPMG, and we also have pro bono legal representation at the trust. We try our best to enlist services that will assist us in servicing the communities free of charge so that we can spend more of our money in communities than what we spend on overheads at the end of the day. So the makeup of our board is the government led by Sport and Recreation South Africa, and then from the corporate sector we have Nedbank, Sun International, Supersport, South African Breweries, Harmony and Coca-Cola. And then the national federations, we have cricket, rugby, Sunshine Tour Golf, and then just recently, SACCOC, which was formerly NOXA and before that, has taken up the seat with the Sports Trust because they were one of the founding partners. We are looking forward to SAFA retaking their seat in due course as well. Our vision is clearly to enhance education through sport, and you will see through our deliverables that we focus a lot on schools. We feel that that's where the bedrock to change lives actually starts, so we're focusing on schools. Our mission is obviously to increase access and opportunities through the mandate to deliver sports equipment and kit and infrastructure, and thereby creating a sporting tradition for our democratic society. Our board of trustees is headed up by Mr. Maxwell Jordan, who is the interim chairman and is also the chairman of this project's committee. We have Mr. Peter Goldhawk, who represents the chairman of the Finance and Administration Committee. And then we have the various representatives from the various corporate sectors and sport. And then we have the management structure headed up by myself. We're based in Johannesburg. And then we have about, with myself included, a staff of 9 that delivers nationally. In terms of our government, how we actually operate is that we act as an implementation partner. So therefore, companies approach us and partner with us to execute their CSI, their corporate responsibility. And some of those are targeted communities. For example, the mining sector wants to reinvest in where they draw their labor force from, and then we have a process where we work with the National Department of Sports and Recreation, how we select the beneficiaries so that at the end of the day, we're still investing in the communities, but it's through the processes of still trying to achieve on the national sports plan and the national government objectives at the end of the day. We have very sound governance in place, and that we have the committees that that works very closely with the office staff to ensure that governance is in place. As I said, we've been audited by KPMG since inception, 1995, and we've received a clean audit annually. Our recent audit was in 2014, and we received an unqualified audit. In 2014, we also reviewed our processes and procedures, and the outcomes of that was that we really need to focus on amending our trust deed and our contracts to really read that we are an implementation partner. Our trust deed allows us to act in that manner, and in implementation partner also falls that we can act as a conduit for sports and recreation to access funding from other donors like the National Lotteries Board. Also, a few of the gaps that they've identified was really minor housekeeping, in the sense that from a financial aspect, even though we put all our paid invoices with the relevant documentation in a certain file, they felt that it had to have a stamp, and so we went to purchase a stamp to say paid invoices and then paid from the credit card. So those were minor issues that they highlighted we needed to pay attention to. In terms of our financial status, we've emailed this out, and then in 2020, 2013, we had an income of 106 million. And then in 2014, 75 million. And those are made up from the donations that we get from the corporates, by the funding that we get from Sports and Recreation South Africa for specific programs that we run, as well as some funding from the National Lotteries Board to assist Sports and Recreation to fund the national school games. The 2014 funding for the national school games has not been received from the Lotto as yet, so we'll talk about that later. And then, Mr. Munger, can you go back? In terms of our total expenses, it amounts to about 7.1 million. Our surplus before interest and fair value gains is about 68, and those are with investments and then our project sponsored, it's really 68 million for the 2014 period. I just want to quickly just look at, tell you what the percentage is that we actually spend on project deliverables compared to spending on our operating expenses. So I just want to quickly, if you don't mind, it's 92% of our budget are spent on our deliverables instead of our operating expenses. In terms of our partnerships, we've got, as I said, partnerships with government, corporate, and other NGOs. And I'll be asking Simanga, my colleague on my left, as he heads of that department, just to give you an intro in what we do in that department. Thank you. And I'll interject in between just to give some more detail, if you don't mind.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, members of the committee. In terms of our deliverables, we have partnered with various government departments. With SRSA, as Anita has indicated, that we act as an implementation partner. We produce multi-purpose courts and develop other infrastructures for them. Like, for instance, if there are facilities that need upgrading, we do that for SRSA. We act as a conduit for lotto applications for various events organized by SRSA, e.g. the National School Champs, Sports Awards, Nelson Mandela Day, etc. Our partnership, we stretched it to go into other various provincial departments. Currently, we have a partnership with the Free State Province. We've managed the logistics for them for the National Schools Championships, as the teams came in earlier, so they needed some assistance in terms of the logistics and team preparations. And we've also constructed multiple sports courts in Free State, and we're trying to develop some programs for the utilization of those sports courts. KZN, same as Free State. In Western Cape Province, we have a program to develop athletes through cycling and anti-gangsterism campaigns through development of self-defense program. And we've also constructed some multiple sport courts in rural areas in the Cape Town area. Other partnerships include the sports federations and corporates. With Basketball South Africa, we've renovated their facility. The Wembley Basketball Arena, which is allocated in the southern part of Joburg. That facility took us 3 weeks to upgrade. You'll see later what we've done to that facility. Cricket South Africa, we've renovated the club house in Rivali, which is in Gauteng. We've provided cricket nets in Orange Farm, which is also in Gauteng. And then with SAFA, we currently trying to develop a futsal league throughout the facilities that the sports trust has developed or produced in the schools. With Poland Athletics, we've provided pole vault poles for certain athletes to go another level up, because their poles were 5 meters, they needed poles that are 6 meters to advance to the next level. Super Squad, we have a youth development and teachers training through Let's Play, which is one program that I'm sure most of the members in the house are familiar with. The program is run at the multi-purpose sports around the country. But currently we have a pilot phase which will elaborate on it on a later stage. Targeted partnerships are with Northern Cape province. We want to go in as a strategic partnership and implementation partner. And we're also planning to construct new multi-purpose sport courts, and also renovate and repair existing facilities, because currently the state of our sport facility is quite bad, because most of them, they get damaged. Those facilities, they don't last long. So we're trying to renovate those that are vandalized and those that are degrading. KZN, we're trying also, the program has started, the athletes development through road running. My colleagues will touch on that in further details. Gauteng province, we want to be strategic and implementation partnership, and also we want to tap in the multi-purpose facility upgrading and development, especially looking into currently the new rollout plan for the multi-purpose centers. All other provinces we're targeting to be strategic and implementation partners through multi-purpose sport courts and athletes development in various sporting codes. Within corporates, currently we are in talks with the Sibanye Gold Mine, Sibanye Gold, in terms of constructing multi-purpose sports courts in their mining communities, which two areas that we targeted is Free State and Gauteng. And Gauteng Gambling Board also want to construct four multi-purpose. We're planning to engage them into talks to construct four multi-purpose sport courts within Gauteng for 5 years, four sport courts in each year. With Love Life, I've heard the colleagues talking about the multi-purpose sport courts. We're also trying to get into their facilities to renovate what they currently have, and also to construct to upgrade four of their Love Life centers. And we also want to partner with them in terms of the sport courts program support.
From the presentation so far from Simanga and myself, I just want to point out again that most of the work that we do is through project partnership funding. So as the sports trust, we don't decide who the beneficiaries are going to be. It's through a partnership between the funder, we just liaise with the national government, Department of Sport, and they then decide through their consultative processes for the provinces who the beneficiaries would be from the grants that we would raise, or the facilities that we would install or renovate in those areas. It's really not the sports trust who decides. Okay, so I'm going to hand over to Oba King to lead you through the infrastructure development that we've done. And these are just recent. We haven't dated it gone far back. We've just done the recent ones.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, members. I'm just going to talk through the infrastructure development part of the sports trust. Our focus in terms of infrastructure is the installation of multi-purpose sports courts and schools, and as well as renovating existing sporting facilities, for example, your clubhouses, your evolution facilities, and etc. The real aim for our focus in terms of the outcomes that we are specifically looking for is to increase and create opportunities for sports participation in the country, and also to increase the number of beneficiaries from our previously disadvantaged communities in the country, where some of them are still currently disadvantaged. You will see our goal in the different 9 provinces is to actually have a court in each of the municipalities. I think that's where our starting goal is. But eventually we're looking at having funding willing. We're looking at about 226 sports, multi-purpose sports courts in the country. Okay.
So far, we've actually installed from 2012 to 2014. We've installed 32 courts, 17 of which are in the rural areas, and 15 in township areas.
In 2015, we're looking at installing 18 courts, which we want to spread the split between 9 rural and 9 township sites that we aim for. The trust, by the end of this year, we are hoping to have 50 multi-purpose sports courts across the country. You will see in the map that kind of give you an idea where each court is. The sport court package, this is, I think, gives a brief of what the package entails in terms of the handovers, in terms of the people getting a 10-time invite to the event, and the cost of the entire sport court. Also, just to highlight the kind of extra that come with the package, we give each school 10 balls for each coach, 5 different sporting codes, and we also have a ball that we currently trying to invest in, which is called One World Football. It doesn't punch. You can't deflate the ball, so it works when we take it to our rural areas where the area is not conducive for certain sports balls that they use. We also offer fencing with the multi-purpose sport court. The court lasts 20 years. It has a lifespan of 20 years and about 15-year warranty. It's virtually maintenance-free. It has a lot of letter of forgiveness in terms of the players itself, which I think Minister Motsoaledi will appreciate. We kind of try to decrease the issues on knees and joints and all those injuries that we all pick up at a later stage in our lives. And the court has been certified as zero waste in terms of recycled materials. We've just put up a picture of what the site looked like before. This is specifically in designer. It was not by the chair's direction for us to choose that court. It was just it looked the perfect picture for us to illustrate what we are trying to do. That is what it looks like before, and that is what it looks like currently. We are just waiting on a few confirmations so that we can arrange the handover to these for these particular facilities. I must stress, as much as we haven't put it in our notes, some of the facilities that we've put up, we don't hold back on the community in terms of them using it because of a handover. So what happens is we will install, and as soon as the court is installed, the community has the right, and this is communicated to them as well, they have the right to start using the facility. And should the handover happen 3 months later, we will then come back and kind of beautify it for the handover, but we don't wait for handovers because sometimes the handover can happen after 6 months and we don't want our communities waiting that long.
If I may just add, the surface that you've seen, as OBS pointed out, is very durable and it gives you that longevity, but if we have the complete system within the country, because currently in the past we used to level the ground, build a concrete court, and then put the top tiles, which we call the sport court tiles, on top of that, and then the kids can play. And that would normally take us about a month to do that surface. We've now investigated, and in South Africa, we've worked with the relationship that we have with the U.S. manufacturer. We've convinced them, because of the demand that we've had, to build, to send us the tool for the what we call the sports base. So instead of building a concrete court base, we now have a recycled sports base made out of plastic, so that it takes us a lesser time and it's less taxing in terms of using water to level the grounds and do the concrete base. We're now going to a community, we can level the grounds, put on the sports base, put up the sport court tiles, and within a week, latest 2, sport can be played on that surface. That is all subject to having the sport court tile in the country, and as I said once again, it all depends on when we have the funds from the required fund or from national governments in our coffers to proceed to build and install these facilities.
We've just included a few of the success stories. We would like to have 32 of these in our presentation, as we have 32 courts currently. But we've just included 3 of the schools that are currently playing. And I think I should also mention that we are currently trying, as my colleague Smanga has mentioned, to pilot a Let's Play kind of initiative at all these schools, because the one thing that we've picked up is, as much as we are busy with infrastructure and we are expecting the federations to augment in terms of the programs, sports specific code, we are not winning in that regard. I think on a personal note, I'd also like to appeal to this committee if they can assist in that regard, because we find that federations who are supposed to use these facilities, netball, currently we're talking with SAFA, so we're getting a light in that direction, but we find that these federations don't have programs running in various provinces and various districts, and that kind of hampers what we are about. We're trying to put in the infrastructure for them to play their programs, but we seemingly not finding programs. So what we've done is not we're not trying to fight the federations. We're trying to get the kids playing. So we are now in talks with Let's Play, so we can get some kind of programming, structured programming going at these multi-purpose sports courts.
Sorry, as I said, I'll elaborate a little further. What we're trying to, with these multi-purpose sports courts, to achieve is that they become integrated community hubs, where we place it in a school and it's known as the host school. They then share that resource with the surrounding schools as well as the community club structures, because we believe that we do not have the financial resources to place a court in each and every school, and therefore they need to then share this resource with these club structures, and at the end we are hoping that the one would assist the other with upskilling and running programs at these facilities.
So we're hoping when we come back for a report, we're going to have 32, actually 50 success stories, because we're aiming for 50 courts at the end of this year. Okay. We've also just included a few pics of the kind of the things that we've done in terms of infrastructure. Up there is the Wembley facility arena, which my colleagues Manga had mentioned earlier on. We've done a bit of renovations and refurbishment on that. That is the cricket club in Rivoli, which we have renovated as well. And that is the Sasonke Boxing Gym. You will see there's a before and there isn't an after picture. It is a proposed picture. And I think we can further elaborate on that.
Okay. So Sasonke, if I may just, Samanga, if you can go back there, please. Sasonke Boxing Club has been in our books for quite a while. The reason being is that at the time we received the instruction from Sports and Recreation, the Sasonke Boxing Club was under the East London Veterans Boxing Forum. That's actually the mother body. And so what happened was they had purchased land from the owner, and the owner did not subdivide the land, which was her responsibility. It took us about more than a year to locate the owner, which was not our responsibility, it was the responsibility, but we decided of the boxing club we would assist to get the, to get progress on the project. And then what materialized later was that once we got her to sign, we now had to register the boxing structures within that community as legal entities. Because while we're doing that, we're also running the application for the subdivision. But the land cannot be registered in Sasonke's name or the East London Veterans Boxing Federation unless they're registered as an entity. So we took consultation with the Sports and Recreation National, because we're doing this on their behalf. We then registered all three boxing entities and then our legal entities, and we're still going through the process of finalizing the subdivision of the land. Once that is completed, we can then start with, while it's running, we're starting the process of identifying service providers so that we can then look at tenders for that. And this is a unique one, obviously, so we're doing a tender process on this. And so that once the subdivision is completed, we can automatically start with the construction process. This project has been in our books since 2012, and so we're really eager to see that we start with this construction at this project. Obviously, initially the funding awarded for this project was 3.8 million. The only expenses we've had on this project was minimal logistical costs for us to go there to make certain that we meet with the box instructors and our attorneys, that they are able to outline what the processes are that we need to follow, and then also for the company that registered the three entities and also the company that's handling the subdivision. So there's been minimal cost that has been outlaid for this project. I think we have about $3.8 million in the coffers to then make certain that we deliver this program. We hope that we can start this process most probably by April, May, that we can start with construction once the processes with the Department of and local government, trade and local government has been completed. We cannot do anything on that property unless the subdivision has been approved. We run the risk of when we start renovations that the owner can come back, but rightfully this is my land and I'm declining. So we can't run that risk. So that's where we are with Sasanka.
Sorry. And then finally, we've just included a map. It is not just a 100% ratio of what we have, but it's just highlighting our kind of sporting posts and where we are within the provinces in the country. Thank you.
We'll lead into what we do in terms of just for one or two of our funders in terms of the sport code development, which is basically the soft codes that we work with closely with, especially Nedbank in certain communities where they have key properties and then they have a CSI program attached to those properties, like your Nedbank Cup, the Comrades Marathon. We have CSI programs attached to that.
Good day, Madam Chair and ladies and gentlemen. I'll run through the Nedbank Sports Trust Cycling Program as well as other soft programs that we have at the Sports Trust. The Nedbank Cycling Program has been running for 9 years this year, and since then we've touched over 1,000 learners throughout 36 schools in the Western Cape, I think Cape Metro and your Portland area. Just to highlight that the event was centered around the Cape August. And this year, through consultation with Nedbank and our stakeholders, we decided that because core of the funding in previous years was concentrated on the August, we'd now take back the program to the communities through cycling. The August is basically a fun run that is the largest time to race on in the globe. So what we've decided now is that schools that are in the program will then participate in community races, which are hosted within their communities. So we're no longer having to take kids and spending bulk of the funding in taking learners out of where they're from to areas or urban areas where these cycling races are hosted. Currently, through Western Province Cycling and Cycling South Africa, we'll be hosting 4 races of our own in the areas of 2 in Cape Metro, 1 in the Portland area, and 1 in South and the West Coast, as well as 8 school league races, which the format that we're looking at there is learners will participate in each race that we identify and gain points to participate in the August in the following year. But the bigger picture in this is that we want to nurture talent and develop talent international cyclists. So the aim is through the point system, learners will be identified as potential athletes. Success stories thus far, since 2012, we've had 4 youngsters from Rockland that were selected for the Western Province Cycling Team. In 2014, we had another 4 youngsters that were identified for the Western Province Cycling Team. And through the program, we're hoping that the vision is 2018, the Youth Olympics, that at least we have 10 youngsters that are from the program that will be participating in the 2018 Olympics.
And sorry, just on that, I need to highlight that of the 4 youngsters that made Western Province Team, 2 of them have kind of been identified by the coach to hopefully make the national team and wear the green and gold by the end of this year. We're very proud of that. We also have a concerted effort to include young ladies into the program. We have found that with the schools, they have challenges to get the girls involved, but schools like Oval North and schools have made a concerted effort to look at getting the numbers up in terms of getting girls' participation. Oval North has got a number of young boys riding, but they've also now got 10 girls in their program, which means that the challenge that we've had in the past where the girls trained for the boys, that the boys will outride them and not be concerned about them. And now we've said, no, we need a dedicated teacher just to take the girls in the program and make certain that they prosper as well and that they make provincial and national teams as well. So there's a concerted effort there in terms of women's sports.
And the next program is the Nedbank Sports Just Running program that is running KZN as part of the Comrades Marathon. This program is now running for 3 years and has impacted over 423 learners in disadvantaged communities throughout KZN. These are townships of Umlazi, Varulam, Lamont, etc. For 2015, yeah, we've also tweaked the program a bit that we've always done programs as a more of a math participation, and these youngsters are showing improvement and potential to become elite runners. In 2014, we had two youngsters from Ogwini High School that represented KZN in their respective races. The lady in the middle, there's a special story in that in 2013, I actually came across it by the ladies, and she was crying in that it was the first time she had owned a pair of running shoes that were new and a vest to call her own. And, you know, in 2014, she outshone and showed that she is a potential runner. She was now representing KZN in her respective cross-country event. And moving on to the Nedbank Soft Kits and Training Kits program, which is run by Nedbank as part of the Nedbank Cup CSI. Through this program, we've distributed over 466 soccer kits, 129 training kits, 450 balls across schools in South Africa. And that's one of the benefiting schools, Nobuzola Intermediate School in Mangaung of the Free State. And the Nedbank Golf Development Program that is run through South African Golf Development Board as well as South African Disabled Golf Association. This program also speaks highly to your disadvantaged communities and athletes through SADCA. These partnerships have been running for 8 and 3 years respectively through SADCA as well as the African Golf Development Board. And on the success stories in 2014, you'll notice that we've got learners under the age of 18 that are achieving handicaps from 5 and below, which I think is an astonishing achievement for these youngsters. And on the screen, you'll notice those are the pics from the handover hosted last year, where we donated monies to the respective organizations to use for purchasing golf equipment and kits in their various chapters, so to speak. And then lastly, we have a discretionary fund at the Sports Trust. This fund is particularly used to assist individuals, clubs, sports councils with kits, equipment, and kits. For various sporting codes. In the 2014-15 fiscal year, the trust assisted 80 applicants covering the codes listed below. And it's through that we're able to assist the two gentlemen flanking the lady who got scholarships at Tux and are ranked 1 and 3rd respectively in SA as well as top 10 in the world. Thank you.
Okay, I must apologize, there was one item that we've omitted to report on, and that's on the National School Games, because we do act as a conduit for Department of Sports and Recreation to access funding from the National Lotteries Board. And what we do there is we merely facilitate the payment to the service providers to ensure that the games can take place. We are not involved in staging the games, we're not involved in the processes of awarding contracts to service providers. We merely act as the conduit to facilitate the payment, where we get instruction from Sports and Recreation to say that these service providers, through their processes, have been awarded the contracts, and that we need to ensure that part payment is made so that the games can happen timeously and efficiently. From our side of what we've managed, just to give you an idea, in 2013, the games, because it was held in Bloemfontein and the time factor that is held, it's normally during the peak time in December, and when people here, especially hotels and other service providers, about 9,600 participants, which included your athletes, your coaches, your volunteers, and that games costed us about 64 million over 5 days. And if you work it out per capita, it was 1,300 rand per person per day, which included your accommodation, your playing venues, your meals, your ceremonies, your supplements, your medals, your transport, and those kind of things. Everything that's to do with hosting an event cost us per person 1,300 rand. In 2014, the total cost for the games cost us about 62 million. It was held in Pretoria, and obviously they had increased the number of participants because they had increased the number of codes at the 2014 events, which obviously Sports and Recreation will account for to this committee. But just to give you a background of what we have handled and accounted on their behalf, we had a number of 13,500 participants, which included your athletes, once again your coaches, your volunteers and other officials, and that came to, over 5 days, came to per capita 918 rand. Now, if you equate this to what the independent schools pay when they have events, we are still doing, and we're still providing inferior quality to our people, our kids that deserve much better at these games, better quality, and all those things at those games. So it's something that we need to think about when people speculate out there that these are very costly. If you work it out per capita, you will see the real value per person at the end of the day. Okay.
Ma'am, just before you go over the questions, I think we've spelled out we are living the mandate where we're saying we do collect public funds, we identify beneficiaries, we pay the providers, we present the programs in the community, therefore creating active lifestyles, and through that we are creating and restoring dignity among the disadvantaged populations. I thank you for your attention. Thanks, ma'am.
Honourable members, this is our time now. I've seen so many things that I'm interested on. Tate Mabika, Tate Mbangane, Tate Malaze, Tate Bergman, Tate Mutege, everybody, Tate Musi, Me manana, I give me. What order?
Thank you, Jefferson, for the opportunity. One must thank the Sports Trust for the presentation that they've just delivered. But I just want to check if they are satisfied with the progress that they have made in terms of the involvement of the deep, deep rural areas, because as I was listening, when they talk of the rural areas, they will mention areas around the metro, for instance, if you're making a mention of Mlaas, Lamontville, Verle, that is not really the rural areas that we know, because that will form part of the Durban metro. And then one wonders as to if they are still centered around the cities, when are they going to go deep down to the rural areas? And one would also be interested in knowing, though I have heard that you are not involved, as to where to construct the courts and so on and so forth, but you're saying your intention is to ensure that each municipality in the country has got a court. So I wonder if you have got figures as to how far have you gone with that with that process, so as to be able to see if you have not built one from where I come from. I come from a deep rural area, so as to know that you are still coming. Because as I say, I've got an experience as a sport. I was involved in sports as an educator. And then most of the entities like yourself, they will participate mostly at the national or provincial level without having to go deep down and to check. It's like as was last people were here. They're involved with national games. You'll begin to realize and to notice them at the last event, at national level. But they do not go down where the masses are, where, for instance, most children are. Because to support with the 64 million at a national level, you are just supporting those chosen few. But the majority are just left unattended at their places. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. I just want to start with the outlook of the Sports Trust. I mean, there's something occurring to me regarding the BBE card. If you look at the composition of the trustees, it's an all-male team. And I do understand that, you know, this comes from, you know, the respective trustees, but it does work against the spirit of, you know, what the... Now, it's a serious thing. It does work against, the spirit of what the country is trying to do in terms of gender equality. But, you know, you also look in terms of the management structure. I mean, in the management position, there's... You know, now black female, and I don't want to do racial bin counting, but you know, this speaks back to that. So I just want to, you know, get more clarity on, you know, future plans to correct, you know, the outlook of both from trustee level and from a senior management level. But moving on to operational matters, if we look at the cost of computer and office furniture, it has tripled from 46,000 to 192,000. So if you can get an explanation there. And the other issue was with regard to income from dividend income on investments. If we can get a sense of where, you know, those investments are and what's their general contribution there. But perhaps more clarity on, you know, the role that the Sports Trust acts as a conduit for various of its funders, and whether, like, is it established in terms of the legislative framework, or is it in line with, you know, the, I presume there'll be memorandum of understanding with each of the individual partners that are in there, because, you know, this relates to how allocation of fundings is done. You know, the department contributes at least 65 million to the department, and the department, to the sports funds, and the department is guided by the PFMA in terms of, you know, allocation and spending of financial resources. And also to get, you know, a sense of, in line with that role as a conduit, what is or what has been the exact role of the sports trust with regard to the housing and the management and execution of the sports awards of recently. And just one figure just caught me curiously. It indicated that in terms of the discretionary funding, that 80 applicants were assisted with, you know, various material equipment. I'd be more curious to find out, you know, what was the total number of applications that came through, or is it just presumed that these successful applications represent the totality of every application that came in, so that we can measure what is the measure of, you know, total applications vis-a-vis successful applications that got the material. Thank you.
Okay.
And just to take off from where my colleague left off, I'm also quite interested to understand why on the layoff we get to SRSA and then we'd have the Sports Trust having to be a conduit in terms of distribution when, you know, you'd hope that SRSA would be quite capable themselves, or, you know, that'd be almost a parallel layer that we can interrogate directly on both sides. I would want to understand is, do you tender for work? Like, do you call for tenders? Do you say, right, we're building these multi-purpose courts, let's call for a tender. You look at the sports, the national championships, 64 million rand, there's quite a lot to tender for. I know that one of the allegations was that there were Orange Free State, there's Free State drivers, busting everyone around in Pretoria. When in Pretoria you could use the, you know, there could have been a tender system taking place there. I mean, in terms of the money for the Songkhetsum, I think there was allocated in 2012. So where is that money sitting? When and what's happening in that situation? The previous chairman, Rob Fleming, what happened there? Where's our dear friend gone? In terms of the AGM, the annual AGM, are we privy to those minutes? Is there any chance of us possibly receiving such minutes as this committee? And yeah, that's it from our side.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also welcome the presentation, and also thank them the way they brought it. You see, we sometimes better to get the progress if it is not presented in the way it is. You see, when you show me before and the current, before and after, it's much more better. You can see where you're coming from and where we are going. That's how we want it. That's why we used to battle. We used to fight with other entities when they present. My problem, Chair, is that the beneficiaries are not appointed by them. I mean, they are not deciding who is the next beneficiary for multi-purpose. They are saying the funders are doing it. As if I got them right. They're saying the funders are doing it. They are not choosing. Maybe that's why some of the provinces are neglected. I'm trying to check where's Mpumalanga. Where is Limpopo? I don't see them benefiting from these things. I'm trying to check wherever I have been, in Mpumalanga and in Limpopo, these multi-purpose. I never seen them. So, but we are not doing justice to the entire country. I think they are very beautiful things, and every province must benefit out of these things. But if someone is deciding somewhere and thinking the rural school in Limpopo doesn't deserve some things like this, or somewhere in Guangua they don't deserve these things, or in Mpumalanga somewhere there, so it can be just justifiable. Not at all. And I also think it is a good thing, just because you can't build it everywhere. This thing of uniting schools to use one facility is it's good. And the most regrettable thing is when people are given these facilities but they don't use them. That is very regrettable. Because, Chair, I want to share with the members here. You see, in rural areas where we come from, this is what we do. In the ground, people are working day and night in ground, are running. You see, but there are people who are given these things and they don't use them. and then our kids in rural areas are so passionate about sports. We're learning under 15s, under 12s, under all these and the seniors, non-stop, but no facilities, nothing. But you go to the cities, you find this multi-purpose stuff and all that dry, nothing is happening in there. So that's why we fight so much about the rural. We send brands into the rural areas. We're not talking only our homes where we come from. We're talking rural. Everywhere where there's rural village, we want to see that village benefiting somebody. We don't say build each and every village, but if each municipality, local municipality can have that thing, and then it will be much more better. Then when time goes, we can build more. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I understand Anita much better when she says they actually sometimes not decide that much of, you know, what should happen and where and how. But I just want to check with them that where they have been told to go and build. I've seen in one area there is this multi-purpose court, but it is just a court with a barbed wire just close to, you know, that court, and it does not have stands where you know people can sit, where perhaps you said something about the disabled people would come to watch and can sit, and I'm not sure what you do about that. But I've also seen that a number of soccer tests that you build does not have these athletic threats around it, which to me it's partly helping the community when you have a beautiful artificial soccer turf, but you don't have anything for athletics for that community. I also want to check with the person as to who actually is responsible for ensuring that, you know, people of that community are trained in as far as, you know, how to use. I've seen with the multi-people's court, there would be the basketball, I suppose, I'm not sure, the netball, I'm not sure, but there is also this small post. It looks like a mini soccer, something like that. And no one knows anything about those things. And who's responsible for informing, you know, the community on how to optimally, you know, utilize that everything. And then finally, Chairperson, would they be bravely indicate to the committee that where they build these facilities, they've done that and there is absolutely nothing that they did not do. They've got the artificial turf with the ablution facilities functioning. Would they be brave to say that to us? And thank you, Chairperson.
The princess.
Thank you, Chairperson. My point has been covered by Honorable Mdeka and Mabika, including Honorable Mosi. Thank you.
I'm not yet covered. I want to raise something. Honorable Mdeka covered me because I was worried about it. Sports trust that cannot decide on the beneficiaries. You know, we are part of this committee. I would love really that what can we do to assist to check whether in each of the 9 provinces we have facilities. Can we facilitate that as 9 provincial leaders? Is this a corruption that we must ask
we must look and identify those areas to the municipalities, not to our likings. I'm suspecting that if we can have a role, but if we're saying that that role you don't need it, we'll always complain. Initially to Ulotar, we said to Ulotar, if we don't involve in public representatives and the chiefs, won't be satisfied because your applications sometimes are not very, very simple. I'm putting this that as we are sitting here, even Utada Uwip and Utada Bergman and Utada Abrahams, they know farms in these big cities. When sometimes I'm joking about the Gauteng, you don't have that rural areas, but we have two of the poorest who are farmers who have got kids. So I'm saying that can we as these members take responsibility to knock at your doors officially? That I've seen that we have on NetBank that are giving kids. But as we're sitting here, we have a lot of poor clubs that are at our local, not even at provincial, local, that can't we declare here that we want to assist, even if it's one club or two clubs in your area, the most vulnerable. I'm putting on behalf of my members, because until that we must be involved. We are not forcing, but we are pleading that at least we must say that come 5 years, we have contributed on identifying the rural areas. You will be saying that the financial implication for this year won't allow, please wait for ABC. I've also want to check with you, because in a way, Love Life, they do have some programs that they can assist. We have seen that we didn't have enough time with Love Life. With you, we have seen that we have done these multi-purpose centers, and we are trying to go to rural areas, but there are provinces that we are still seeing gaps. So we need to assist in order that at least we will be proud to think that during our time we have assisted our rural communities, especially with the kids. I've reported to honorable members that one other entity gave me e-sport kids of 11 schools. Kids were crying tears. They were saying that they've been disqualified in the sport because of these clots that are put by pins at the back, and then when they are running, those things are just running away. So as we're sitting here, if we can identify, maybe tell us that each leader must identify about two rural schools that are not having, we are not only the entities that can assist. Live Life I've seen that they can assist. And recently, two or 2 weeks ago, I was invited by Multi Choice, and they are saying that now they've got a program that they want to assist in rural club, whatever. So those people we need to call. But when we're calling you, when we're knocking, you must know that we're not knocking for our good selves. We're representatives of the communities. Until we achieve this problem that we are seeing of what you call indolent zapa and abantu banganimameli bajongapa. Switch off this thing, because maybe it's very interesting, and then when we are answering, you must put it. I'm saying really, some of us were speaking on behalf of the committee, of the rural cry of the resources that are not there, we are saying that we are trying, but immediately that we are not deciding, we don't know whether if we are forwarding our application to you, you will be able to decide that in this province, at least we've done nothing. We'll be looking at your presentation. I'm suspecting that as we're sitting here, some of us, we've went to these facilities that are not taking care, even here in Western Cape, pools. Life and Sport Trust, we need to take them to these areas that you have just called to see the problems, seeing where is this Life, where is this Sport Trust, once Sport Trust will be given a mandate by other people. We are the leaders of the people. I'm not ashamed and afraid to stand in for our provinces. Honorable Mabega, I'm pleaded that those rural sport club give it to Ubogeng, that he must assist you with your request. Because now I've got so many requests. We don't have budget. We're not ministers. But through the interesting, maybe the way that we're contributing, people that they're even thinking that we do have a budget that we can assist. They're just wanting it kept. So if each of us, we can have a request, not only to you, Super Sports Trust. So I'm saying, we are doing well, but there are gaps that maybe you can't fly very high because of other things that we are doing. But the only thing that I can say, it's too much that we are giving you. Drop back, we need it. This 63 million, 65. Block back, we need it. We'll hear from our department in coming weeks that they must tell us, account what have you done about that 65 million. But with other monies that you are getting from elsewhere, people shall share with your committee. I am not afraid of saying that. Share with your committee. We don't want any brown envelopes. We want kids, we want facilities in our areas. I'm suspecting with those words, I'll in the announcement, I'll tell what you have done. I've already indicated what you have done in Bizan, in this area, that it was out of you and those communities there. Minister is wanting to look at the dias. He was not involved. We tried that he must be involved when we have started this work, that one or two members must go together with the minister, because it's our initiative. If Chairperson initiated that, we must own it with the minister and with some members. Budget allowed that we must go and open, in order that we must see that over again. You promise us when you were visiting, thanks that you joined ECOMIT. We didn't invite you. Through your interest, seeming we have got passionate about sport. Honorable Malazi, you must do a follow-up out of this meeting about that field that we went there. And then he saw what is going on. And Utatu Whip must whip you in this thing of Limpopo, that Sports Trust must assist us. We've promised that we're having you guys on behalf of you, that we need something to happen, let alone with the rugby that you're still going to have in this report. But when we are going, sometimes it's nice that we've just randomly saying that we'll give you these kids, but you don't have budget, will come to you saying that we have promised and fulfill our promise. So I'm saying that we have said we'll be going back to Limpopo March. Come March, I don't know whether we'll be very late. Also, you have noticed that what we are Ulotar is doing with you, there's no monitoring tools. There's a huge money that it was given such school in Limpopo. That's why Honorable Muteka is saying that really we need to be involved to assist, not to criticize, to check how can we monitor when we're doing the oversight, the monies that are given. This thing that you don't participate in identifying beneficiaries, maybe it's a law or it's a rule, but other way around, TNC committee will come, will chip in, because there are a lot of money that it went to that school, but the principal concluded saying that they don't have sports here. But we're wondering, why did they apply and then given that money? So with those words, we would love you to say very soon we'll call you, and very soon these members, they will contact you, especially when you're over again. Members, take the number of that gang. Really, I mean it. I'll take chances for my communities, and I don't want not to share that. And then I'm there to go gang back home, because he wanted to assist the people of this country. What else? Yes, the response from the presenters, maybe there will be follow-ups. Now, I've just finished my contribution saying that members, Ibani listen, you're the Kakamba, Baba Bantu.
Thank you so much for that constructive input, and we try our best to address all the questions that you've put forward to us. In terms of the progress that we've made in rural communities, we ourselves are not very satisfied because we believe more can be done. But as we've stated that how we operate, let me make an example again. When a funder, for example, Harmony, comes to us and says they want to invest, their mining operation is in Pienison, in the Free State. They need to invest in that community. We would then go back to Sports and Recreation National to say through your consultative processes, go back to your province and through to their district to identify the beneficiary school within that community. Similarly to when Nedbank comes to a part of the Nedbank Cup, as also you've seen on TV, the Goal for Goals initiative. Now, part of that is they award a school a sport court, multi-purpose sport court. And so once they've identified the province and the area, we then go back to National Department of Sports and Recreation once again, and they would identify the beneficiaries through the consultative processes. The reason why we do that as a trust is because they have the list of the national agenda in terms of schools that they believe should be receiving these courses, and maybe priority on the list, and that is why we go through those processes. Just regarding, and also if I could answer this question in terms of the service providers, because I'm talking about the multi-purpose sports courts, so if I can just kill two birds with one stone. The service, though, we don't do tender processes on the sports court. Reason being is that there is only one accredited service provider in Africa that can install that court. And so if we use other service providers, they won't be able to access that service from the manufacturing, from the international manufacturer. And that is why we're also trying our best to make certain that due to the demand that we have, that we can locally produce the services in South Africa at the end of the day. But they would have to partner with a service provider, like they did with a sports court space here in South Africa. We have got one in Brits, and that's Impact, which is formerly known as Mundi, who now produces the sports court space. When they bring in the service, when we have sufficient demand, they would then look at bringing the sports court tile tool, and we must probably place this in Atlantis, where the Impact has got another branch, so that we can manufacture it there to service our needs. So on that, sir, for multi-purpose sports courts, we cannot tender that because there's only one service provider. We lose the warranty, and that is not the risk that we want to take. It's a really quality service, it's long for 20 years. Maintenance fee, that's the biggest problem within our community, is maintenance. And so we've investigated a service that would alleviate that maintenance. I'm also going to address the issue for our facilities in schools and the reason behind us going into schools. Firstly, it's the bedrock where we find most of the young people, they are in schools. I recall when I was a young girl, when I was introduced to sport, it was at school, not at club level, but at school level that we played sport. Also, there's the issue of safety and security with the facilities that we have. And our community vandalized these things, whether we like it or not. We need to be upfront about these things. For us, placing it in school has a sense of security. Also, we then, if we have to place this facility in a communal area, we now have to look at ablution facilities that we need to build. And so for placing it in a school, immediately there is access to ablution facilities for the people that's utilizing these facilities. And we drive the point to these schools that the resource is not for them alone. It must become an integrated community hub where the schools, where the clubs can access this resource. For example, in Makado, we had two facilities that we put down. One is a communal because the chief had granted land, and one was in a school which was about how many kilometers? 900-800 meters from each other? 4 kilometers from each other. And there, we had said to the community, it's the first and only court that we have on communal grounds. There's no ablution facility there, and it's a great concern for us, because where do we expect these kids to get dressed into their sports uniform? Under the tree? No. That is not what we want to give our young people. I wouldn't want to get dressed under a tree to go and play my sport. And so therefore, because we don't have the funding to build ablution facilities with these infrastructure sports surfaces, we put them in school where we know that they have access to ablution facilities. On the issues of seating capacity, the package that we've designed, because it is costing us, it's a very quality surface, it's costing us 1.1 million. We have addressed the issue of seating, but already funders feel that because it's in a school, we can access chairs and so forth from the school when they play games. To put down seating, it will cost us in the region of about 150, depending on the capacity of people that play there, but a minimum starting off at 150 to 300K. And proper seating, not that you put seating down, and within 6 months' time, it's demolished. It's been vandalized, but we want proper seating when we put it down for these communities. Make certain that when you come back in 5 years' time, we still see the infrastructure there. So those are things that we also, having challenges with. On the issue of our BE card, now in terms of how a trust is structured, in terms of our trust, is that Corporate South Africa would nominate their representatives that sit on the board of the Sports Trust, as well as Sports and Recreation South Africa. As a trust, we can encourage them, but it's ultimately the decision of the person that serves as the head of the corporate social development or in the marketing and sponsorship division. So really we don't have much say about that. We can just encourage. And unfortunately, yes, as a question that we've put, because there are no female representatives on that board. And it's something that they really need to address. So those are things that we'll put through to our
as well. So thank you for that. I wasn't laughing at the question, but something that has been being discussed over the years, how do we address it when the corporate itself are the person that nominates those people and we don't really have much say in that. In terms of the staff complement, I'm actually disappointed that you counted me not as black, because you said it was one black female. I consider myself... Yes, I know it's in there, but they should have put it as we all say.
I don't know what you put.
Yes, yeah, sorry. My apology, but I count myself as black, so I must go back and say person that did the slide purpose, rectify that. I think we are fairly represented on our staff in terms of our female representation and the skills and capabilities that we have to deliver to South Africa in terms of sports development and changing lives, and in terms of our male complements as well. I must tell you that we are a young and vibrant and very passionate bunch of people that work at the Sports Trust. And I hope that in the next 5 or 10 years we're still there to deliver that program that we feel so passionately about. If I have to, Madam Chair, and you've met Oba King, I can call my staff at 2 o'clock in the morning and say, get in your car, we're driving somewhere to go and scope a facility. My staff will be there. And that's the type of people that we have at Sports Trust, passionate and really capable of doing their jobs. And so I hope I've addressed the issue then of our representation, and I've added the capabilities as well. So I hope I've addressed that. In terms of our office expenses having increased, in 2012, when we started accessing more financial resources from Sports and Recreation South Africa, we realized that at the time we were a staff complement of about five that needed to deliver nationally. And because the scope of our work had increased, it meant that we needed to increase the staff complement as well as our hardware to accommodate our deliverables. And that's why you've seen the increments in our office infrastructure. For example, at the Trust, we never believe in just buying computers and photocopiers. We have always relied on the recycled office hardware from our trustees. But what we have found that utilizing that made us incompetent in certain areas because we always had problems because the computers were too old or the photocopies weren't working after a while, and we spent more time trying to fix these things instead of just buying proper hardware. And we have taken a decision that once our scope of work had increased, that we make certain that the staff has the necessary and workable computers and hardware to make certain they can deliver their work more efficiently. So that's why the increase in our expenses on that front. On discretionary fund, Teacher Manager asked you to give me an idea whether we have serviced all the applications that we've received or whether there was one or two that we had to decline.
Madam Chair, through you, with the discretionary fund, I think for a week I received close to 10 applications running through myself and Rochelle. And as you know...
Please repeat what you are saying. Please switch off, Anita.
Sorry. Through the discretionary fund, I received at least 10 applications coming through via email or fax. Some people, because we have our information online, will then send you a please call. You receive a random please call asking you to call, please call supply kit. You know, please call, please help, network it. And to answer whether everyone is catered for, everyone that falls within the guidelines of being assisted is assisted. You'll find that people have an idea of what is required but don't have the resources to fully support the documentation, which is basically a pager giving a description of the club, the number of participants at the club or organization, and the type of assistance that they require. And if they're posting it, we've said, listen, rather write it out and send me a photo of that application, then I'll print it out from my office. And yes, this end of this financial year, with the 80, we've exhausted our financial resources, but from the 1st of April, I'll have to backdate my applications to 2014 April, because unfortunately we don't have the sufficient resources to cater for at a specific time. So I'll have to backdate. I promise that everyone that comes through, or application that comes through my desk, is catered for, whether it's backdating it till 2012, but everyone that comes through that is of sport kit and equipment is catered for with from the Sports Trust.
Thank you so much, Tutu. With regards to our dividends, maybe I should give you a little bit of background of how we operate in terms of our financial standing, our status. So when a funder, a trustee, there's a difference between a funder and a trustee. A trustee comes on board and they would renew initially when Sports and Rec, when NetBank, Super Sports and all those funder trustees joined, they paid the Sports Trust 1 million rand, which we put into seed capital for 5 million rand. And that was to sustain the trust in its operations and its deliverables. Thereafter, every million rand that they paid, and that was over a two-year period, went into the project, the sports deliverables. What we have then done over the years is to invest that money, and from that interest from the seed capital, we then ran the operations of the sports trust, which meant all our overheads we try to cover from that funds. Obviously, in a year where we have the economic environment not being so conducive, we have to pull a little bit of money from the project budgets to make certain that we pull some of those costs to administrative work, which mostly we try not to do. We've only done it once, and we pride ourselves in the fact that we have invested smartly, and in the coming years, if we do not access any financial resources, the trust can still sustain its projects and deliver to communities, inclusive of our overheads. So it's been very smart in that regard, that if we don't access funding from, say, sports and recreation, we can still deliver multipurpose sports courts in the future to some communities. Maybe not at the level that we're getting the funding right now, but we will be able to do that. So that's how we've invested in terms of making certain the trust is sustainable and still continue to change lives in the longer term. Does that answer your question, sir?
Sure.
Okay. Then the conduit set. Okay. So in terms of the National Lotteries Act, Sports and Recreation as a government department cannot access resources from the National Lotteries Board. They need a conduit. And as a trust, we are allowed by legislation to act as a conduit. A trust is a conduit where you act on behalf of other organizations to do work and access resources to do that work. So we act as the conduit to access the financial resources, and then it's clear between the relationship between the Lotto Sports and Recreation and the Sports Trust, which is a trilateral, that they understand we're merely accessing the funding. Sports and Recreation is the owners of the school games, sports awards, Nelson Mandela, and any other property that they want us to access resources on their behalf to ensure that there are opportunities for the young kids and young people in South Africa on those different levels, and also to recognize the performance of the elite athletes. So we merely act as a conduit accessing the funding. They are the owners of the properties. They stage those events. We merely facilitate the payment. Now, as you know, government has a reputation of paying people 6 months, a year, 2 years down the line. So when the service providers hear that the sports trust is involved, because of our track record and credibility and integrity, automatically they are willing to then have those give those resources to government on the basis that we stagger payments to them. Now, interestingly, I need to tell you that for the sports awards and for the national school games,
before the Nelson Mandela, government or Department of Sports and Recreation do not get the funding prior to these events. We run these events in debt at the end of the day because we're still waiting for National Lotteries Board to allocate the funding. So right now, of the 60 for 2014, let me just see, for 2014, 62 million, we were able to access funding from Sports and Recreation's own coffers and then some money that was paid by the provinces for accommodation and meals and so forth, packages that were given to them. We were able to pay service providers just to the tune of over 40 million. We still have to pay service providers just about 17 million or so. So we're still owing people money as we're talking, and we've not received any funding from the National Lotteries Board. So this is the challenge that we have, because once we get the funding, we now have to do reconciliations, pay Peter and Paul, and then pay debtors. So this is what we're sitting with, and the same applies for the other properties that we access funding for them. Okay? Have I answered? Thank you. No, no, it's quite a bunch. I just want to make sure that I've answered. Sasanke. Okay. Now, Sasanke, as I pointed out, is a challenge. We call it our problem baby because we'd like to raise this baby now from a baby to a toddler and then finally an adult. We want to hand over this facility once and for all. But as I said, the issue was the land subdivision. We can't do anything until that process has materialized. The funding is not with anyone else, but with the sports trust. We do not have this fund in our investment account to draw interest because on government funding and National Lottery Sport funding, we are not allowed to draw interest on these monies. But we are going to go back to them and say, in actual fact, we feel we want to put this money in a money market so we can earn the interest and then put back into the programs that we run. That would be the smart thing to do. And so it's something that we're going to discuss. So none of the money has really been spent except for the nominal fees that we had to pay for the processes of subdivision and the registering of the boxing fraternity in that area as legal entities. So that's where we're standing with Sasanke. Have I answered the gentleman? Okay. Okay. So, as I've said, that our trustees are corporates, and then they have trustee representatives, which they then identify will serve on the trust. Now, these people, obviously, they represent Nedbank, but when they sit at the trust, they are neutral because they look at the interests of South Africa in terms of sports development. And so when people then resign or get promoted within their companies, they move on and the companies need to decide on a different representative. In Mr. Fleming's case, he was the representative for South African Breweries. He then moved on to another company. The trust then had the trustees around the table can then nominate a representative based on their skills, business acumen and so forth to serve on the trust as well as on the board. Mr. Fleming came on board with a sense that he would only do 2 years in that position. And in fact, our trustees have a recycle period of 2 years where we then elect a new chairperson. And if the trust feels that at that time of election time that they are very confident in the chairperson, in the existing chairperson, they can renominate that person to serve another 2 years. So does that satisfy your question, sir? Thank you. AGM minutes, we don't have an AGM. As a trust, we have two board meetings a year where all the trustees come at the first meeting, which has been held now in March. We state, obviously, we look at our financial projections, which is very important, and then we look at also our KPIs that we set for the next year, where we are, what do we need to add, what do we take, what have we achieved, those kind of things. So the board sets strategy and then obviously looks at the projected financials that we as the executive others needs to raise. Okay? And if you want access to that, we don't have a problem by submitting them to the portfolio committee. So then, in terms of deep rural areas, as I've said, our relationships are structured in a way that because of the national sports plan, the national objectives, that we don't decide on the beneficiaries. The media conduits go and secure funding, and then sports and recreation would identify through their consultative processes the beneficiaries. But in terms of the multi-purpose sports court specifically, we've had 17 of that in rural areas, and I'm not certain how deep those areas are, but this committee surely can have an influence with sports and recreation to say, we feel that these areas are neglected. In your next allocation, could you please make certain that maybe if you're having 12, four of these goes into these areas. I think it's the task of this committee to influence those decisions, because it's through a consultative process where the provinces then nominate their beneficiaries. So you do have a right then to influence that, and I think it would greatly assist us also when we go and do the deliverables. So we would advise you to then follow those processes with them. In terms of community training, it's not really the responsibility.
Try to be brief to the point. There's another committee who's going to use this room in 13 hours.
Okay, just this one. In terms of community training, it's not our responsibility. We're responsible for infrastructure development, and then we run a few soft programs. With our multi-purpose sport court, there's not really much training that we do. We rely on sports and recreation because of the programs that they run in schools to make certain that people are skilled and trained to be able to deliver the sports programs, as well as we now have a partnership with SuperSport Let's Play, where they do the physical test of the youngsters and also do some field training. And then with regards specifically to futsal, the five-a-side soccer, those small poles, yes, that we are talking to SAPA Futsal to make certain that they spearhead that program, because they have structures within all around South Africa. So it's really their responsibility to take charge of that item. And we'll make certain, because we're having talks with them, to make certain they have programs at our courts. In terms of, yes, we've had a proposal to our funders where we wanted to put down a sport court and then maybe a 400-meter stretch of athletics class and surface. Unfortunately, because of the costing and also where we placed the sport court in certain areas, there wasn't sufficient space. So it's not something that we said we won't pursue. Depending on the subject of funding, it's something that we would consider in the future. Okay. Anything else? Have I addressed everyone's questions, or is there any other?
Yeah. I'm seeing the hand there. Rabushkosan.
The gentleman across me, he raised the question regarding KZN and the distribution of kits, the programs that you're running in KZN. That, just through you, Madam Chair, through the distribution of the kits and the programs that you're running in KZN, particularly the road running, there's a youth race that is held annually before comrades. We find that there are a large number of learners that are from disadvantaged communities that whom I then have chatted with coaches offline. You talk to coaches to send you letters just saying who they are, where they're from, and what kind of assistance they require. And it's normally a process of the back and forth, and they don't come back to you. But we do have something in Mandla Heights that we've now assisted them twice with Nepo Kids and Running Best. So we do initiate conversations with coaches, and we do encourage them, because at the end of the day, it's we're assisting them, assist these learners who are our target audience. You know, if you wish to discuss offline, I am available.
Sorry, Madam Chair, just one last thing, and then if my chair can just wrap up from our side, if I may just say one last thing. I'm aware that
our marketing manager has sent an invitation to the committee for the August cycle race on Nixon, this Sunday, the 8th. We have about 90 young cyclists that's going to participate in the August, and we would most welcome you joining us on that day. We will set up a marquee from 10 o'clock onwards, and so you can interact with these youngsters and really get to know how we've changed their lives through cycling. So you're most welcome to join us. Thank you.
Honourable members, it's in our... Any
Madam Chair, okay. Can I just say from our side, or are you going to close up? I just want to wrap up from the sports press thing. I just want to say thank you for the opportunity that you called us. And again, thank you for the many varied and questions that has been going around in the public domain. And surely it's an indication that this committee is very relevant and concerned about what the Sport Trust is doing. Hopefully we've answered the questions, and I'm sure that we can go back now and the many trustees that we have from the many corporates to indicate to them that we have accounted as they expect us to do. Thank you, ma'am.
Except that when next term are coming, you must not be an interim chairman. We want a full-time chairman. We don't know. No one did tell us why we do have an interim chairman. But also, Honorable Mariga, I'm still maintaining it. After this meeting, go to Utatus Kosana and Obakeng. Because we have presented it to your chairperson, we are not by that. Baba Mbenge Bantu Data, this is the time. Manila Sebenzin Dodo. I'm suspecting that at this committee, we are feeling so bad. We know the problem of boxing. And with this name called Sisonke, it's not your only problem. Once got correspondence that we refer back to themselves. But next week on Tuesday, we are going to have Usanapo as committee. We don't know how are they going to tell us. We have this package that they are giving us that we need them to take care, because we cannot not have a development because of petty things. People call them leaders, but they want the communities to suffer. We are promising you we'll try to get information, and we'll try to be influential, that we want to see that project going on, and you are giving them a task, and they will be doing a follow-up. But those words, we had your presentation, and you have seen the engagement, and keep it up. And also, you must try to assist our rural communities, your young ones, your women. You know that the disadvantaged communities, it's not easy to have even playgrounds, not easy to have the kids. Together we can do more. That's why we're saying that when we're knocking at your doors, you must know that nothing else but we need that. Come 5 years, we'll be testifying that Sport Trust has done this, we know as a committee, because we cannot know what the provinces are doing hungry with you. We can know with your reports, but Tina, we'll be testifying that immediately that we've invited you. And we requested ABC, at least so far we've managed, because we won't do 100% even in our request. With those words, we're looking forward to hear from Ukinezo when is the minister is tending to go to Obakeng. Sometimes Ukinezo, and it was to call Kinezo, I can't call Obakeng. Obakeng said, I must say, Malibonge. Ukinezo is Nigiwe. So I'm trying not to, I'm personalizing them. Huh? You know what, as was sitting here, I'm being cautioned by my advisor. I don't know whether he's a political advisor or when you're watching. He's saying there is a outstanding kids out of those 11 kids. But in this announcement, you want, because they are here, yeah, there are still two schools that this Friday they've asked that I must go and hand over. We are proposing from this side that at least one other person must accompany Uche person to that in OR. And then Ilimpompo also, Utebuo and Honorable Malazi, they will be joined by Honorable Whip. And the date, it will depend between your good self communicating with Ilimpompo. Ilimpompo, we promised as a committee that we'll give them a kit for Irapi. And then there were two clubs that they were presenting, they don't have a rugby kit, and one women club. So we managed to talk with Abandu from Kwasaru. They gave us as a committee those three kits. I've heard that you said four will. Okay, no, it's a mistake. Those three kids, honorable members, we did get it, as they promised to Uteperson on behalf of the committee. And then we wondered that if these honorable two members, they must go and hand over, as usual, must join them, they will communicate with you. With the one in Bizan, they've been ready, but the minister said he has got an interest because Uditi was part of looking at that project is going to be hand over very soon, but we're still waiting for Unikiwe to give us a date diary of the minister. He wanted to minister, said no, Chairperson, I was not involved. But hey, I'm the minister of this committee. This committee is further than me. So there's that thing, and it will take on our resources how many members that we can ask to join a minister and the office of the chairperson, which is committee members. So with those words, we are seeing that we are trying, and without you, we cannot do what we are doing. We are appreciating the assistance from you, whilst we know that you don't have enough budget, but we'll be knocking and knocking till 5 years. Thank you. With those words, thank you so much. Honorable members, I still have some announcement. There is this announcement of what Anita was saying, air cycling. The cycling is on Sunday. I don't have enough information. There are pamphlets. You must talk to the office if you want to go there. Yes. Honorable members, and then I will ask the office of the secretary, somebody who will be accompanying myself to OR, but depending on the approval by House Chairperson. But if they don't approve Ivan Davingos, I'll take my ticket and I'll go there, because the school has already prepared, and they wanted somebody from state. Somebody will be talking about drugs. Seemingly, in those two schools, there is a drug problem. So I'm not yet getting the name of somebody who will accompany us, who is going to address the drug addict. By those words, I don't think we have lunch. Let me release honorable members and our visitor to have their lunch. Thank you so much.
Bye.